All right, Joel Radio. Hey, welcome back to the show. It's 2019. It's a new year. Same fucking podcast. Thank you. Thanks for joining us today. Joel Radio here. I believe, as we're listening to me now, one guest returning, and maybe another. You know, Corey Hall, true to his name, late for 2019. Starting off 19, just like everything going back to 2005.
I-75 is still screwed up.
Oh, it's
in
so
2019.
Bad. Oh my God,
it's been screwed up since 2009.
All right, well he's not here yet. So we started the show without Corey. And what do you think he's going to say when he walks in the door? What do you? I mean, do you
We're
have
protecting
it?
The Sixth?
Well, yeah, let's do it here on the radio so everyone can hear it on the podcast. Yep. What do you think it's going to? Is it going to be an I-75 traffic thing? Because I said that.
We should write that down, put it in an envelope, and hand it to him when he gets here. I'll see.
Or it'll
and
be, you know, something with his parents, and God bless his parents. They're nice people. But he uses them as a bailout on a lot of stuff, you know? So who knows? I'm on deadline. That's a big one for him. I'm on deadline. He's writing his newspaper articles, movie reviews, whatever he's doing nowadays.
So should have done it yesterday, you bummer.
Yeah, well, anyway. Anyway, it's Bill Hildebrand with me. How you doing, Bill?
I think I probably have the record number of appearances here.
Well,
I mean, as far as comics
probably. You know, the record keeping is very,
so nobody's keeping stats.
Look,
then?
Corey wasn't on the show for like 2 months, and then he's back. So is Corey?
Well, I'm not talking about Corey. He doesn't count.
Well, but I don't know if Corey counts or not.
No, I'm just talking about just guys you call up and go, come on over.
For you, yes, which is exactly how you came here today. Actually has nothing to do with it. Bill was at the Comedy Castle last night, and he goes, let's do a podcast. And I go, oh, fuck, I already scheduled one. Just come on that one, which is
like
great.
That. It's not what I said.
Which is great because Corey's
I was on my knees and hugged his ankles saying, please, let's do a podcast. I need something to do tomorrow.
I said, I can't give you stage time at the club, but I'll throw you on the podcast.
And that's okay.
And based upon how many people were at the club for open mic, you might be heard by more people on this. Yeah. What an open mic last night.
It was a pretty good crowd last night. It was all right.
It was okay.
I know. It's just people need work. You know, they're kids.
Yeah. You can see that last night being the first open mic of 2019 at the Comedy Castle was the people who made that New Year's resolution to get back on stage. That's it was a lot of that last
That's right.
night. And that was fine.
And if you go to Planet Fitness tomorrow, you see all these fat people on treadmills going, I'm getting back on here. Oh, yeah. I'm getting back on the horse.
That is the thing. And, you know, I've been going and I'm going to go back, but I'm like the guy who goes, I'm going to wait for them to all quit and then I'll go back.
Which will be... according, so, I heard this on the radio. It'll take 6 weeks.
Okay,
all it takes.
That's how long
then
it takes.
Done. Yep.
Now you know those people. Very smart people over there at Planet Fitness. I don't know if those are everywhere in the country. I think they are.
I think they are too.
If people might be listening to another country, but it's a gym. It's $10 a month, but there's an annual fee, and this is how they get you. This is brilliant on their part. You're going to pay that fee on February 1.
Okay.
Meaning, when you sign up for $10 a month, you're automatically getting, you know what I mean? There's no way out of that.
Right.
You can't say, hey, it's $10 to sign up and then the annual fee because that's like $40. So you may say, hey, it's $10 a month, but everybody's getting hit with, because I think the first month's free. So you know what I mean? They're getting you. Even if you quit on February 2nd, you're still being charged $50 to work out for a month.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
it's
still, it's still cheap.
It is cheap.
I'll tell you what, Dave, because when I moved, I don't know if it's a franchise or not, but there's a place right by me I can walk to called Burn Fitness.
Okay.
And I went there and took the tour, and their fee, they have an annual fee. I don't know what the monthly annual is, but I think it's like either 15 or 20, but the initial fee is $180.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, well, why would I want to do that? I said, look, I'm already at Planet Fitness.
Yeah, right,
I was just thinking this is closer.
Yeah.
This might be a cooler deal, and it wasn't even nicer.
Yeah.
It was smaller. The locker room sucked, and I said, well, who would want to do this? The place is always busy. So I don't know who these people are that go, yeah, this is a good deal. I'm going to do this
instead. Are you paying for the exclusivity of...
No, it's not exclusive at all.
No,
it's
but I mean, but when you charge $180...
There's nothing special about it.
But you're keeping people away by charging a high price, therefore making it feel more exclusive.
But it was still crowded.
Okay, but still, the feeling of exclusivity of, hey, I paid this money.
Oh, all right,
you know,
okay,
it's like a nightclub where you go, we got a $50 cover to keep the riffraff out, and then the riffraff just spends their last $50 to go to the club.
I spend $60,000 on a Cadillac, and I'm still just going from point A to point B.
Right,
it's the same
okay.
Thing. All right, got it.
Fair enough.
All right.
But Bill's here. It's 2019. We got a lot going on with, New Year's Eve comedy. I want to talk about that because we had some celebrities who did some New Year's Eve shows, and things didn't go quite maybe as well as they wanted to. We've got some celebrity deaths. Of course, it's Oscar movie season, so me and Corey are especially hitting that hard, watching all the movie. Watching
I lost track. Did they find a host for the Oscars yet?
No, they don't have a host yet.
See, I'm not doing anything. I'll do it.
That'd be good to just
look into my past and see if I said anything wrong. I don't think they'll find it.
Right. Well, Kevin Hart didn't want to do it over the Twitter thing.
Right.
You know, there was tweets about this is gay or my son. It was something about, you know, my son is gay or
something. If my son is gay. Speaking of gay. Hey, Corey.
Hey, look at that. Oh, man. Hey, Corey.
Fashionably late. Yeah, here we go.
Who's a gay son?
I don't know. One of us. But anyway, so he doesn't want to do it. Would that be cool to do like a contest to see? Find an unknown guy, have him host the Oscars. It'd be a feel-good story.
I want an unknown guy. I want to watch somebody that's
like
a known
quantity. I'm saying you. You're an unknown guy, fucker.
If they ever decided to do that, that'd be cool.
I have the guy for the
Who's the guy?
Geechee guy.
Geechee, well, he'd be a guy. Geechee'd be a guy. Throw out some joke grenades at Matthew McConaughey.
10 seconds and start to laugh.
Jennifer Lawrence.
There you go.
I'd enjoy that.
I watched a video just a moment ago of a local comedian, a friend of ours. Who was doing a podcast.
Who's going to be nameless now? Is that it?
Yeah, he's going to trash somebody. And then it's going to hear Joel's podcast said.
No.
I sucked.
It was Elena Gonzalez.
Okay.
She's fairly new. But she's, up there in years in terms of, whatever.
Oh,
I don't want to name a lady's age, but, she's over 30.
She's a woman 10 years younger than Corey, and he's going to defame her age.
Maybe not 10. But anyway, she's talking to a 23-year-old.
Okay.
And she had to explain who Gallagher was to him.
All right. Well,
Bill, now I understand when I started how you felt. Because I'm like, no, Elena was just trying to do, she did a fine job of explaining Gallagher. And the guy was like, wait, he smashed with the sledgehammer?
Yeah.
Like, that's the fucking bit he does?
Yeah,
he smashed with
it?
And I'm just like, now I understand when I started, all the guys that were 40
I know,
then.
I'm telling you, no, this guy named Soupy got hit with a pie. People loved it. And you guys are going, who?
Well, I've always, me, Corey, both.
That was, people were entirely too amused by pies in the face in the 60s. You know what I mean? It was like, you could do, right. But Soupy would do like a whole act. That was just like, it was just hilarious. Seltzer in the pants.
Do you feel like the level of outrage, started with pie in the face? And now has just gone up to where we're at now.
I don't think
a slow escalation over the decades.
Well, Jack Carr got in trouble with him. He quit tonight's
Jack
show.
Jack Parr.
See, there you
Jack
go.
Carr. Yeah,
come on,
yeah,
get the names right.
Jack Parr walked off the Tonight Show because he had a joke that used the word water closet.
That's right.
And he quit the show and said, there's got to be a better way to make a living than this.
Yeah.
And he was also kind of a undiagnosed schizophrenic.
He was a dick.
Yeah, guy was kind of wacky. But anyway. Yeah. That was controversial in 1962. Okay.
That's what I mean.
Was,
maybe we've gotten to the point now where it's you can't say anything.
I don't think smashing a watermelon was ever controversial.
Well, look. Yeah, you've not seen...
Wait a minute. Watermelons have feelings.
are plants now? Are you going to be one of those, hey, vegans, you're wrong, plants have feelings?
Did you see my shrine to Gallagher out there?
No, I didn't.
Oh, you got it. I've had nice paint. I have an oil painting of Gallagher hanging in my... we'd call that the laundry room back then.
I'm going to
take
check
a look
that
before
out.
You leave.
I've
today.
Told Joel's Gallagher story to many, many people.
And that's kind of why I bought it, because it's like, I never forget that I've told the Gallagher story about 50 times on various shows over the years. The Gallagher story. You want to tell it, Corey, or should I?
You were there. But,
well, Corey's going to put his own spin on it that is going to involve, because it was a ICP related event.
Tell me if I'm wrong here. All right, so
he's going to put a spin on it. That this could have been, I mean, maybe that's why Gallagher ended up the way he did, but anyhow, right. You go ahead. We'll let Corey tell this story.
So Gallagher was playing the Gathering of the Juggalos.
He was, yes.
And
playing where?
The Gathering of the Juggalos.
Okay. Which is a bit that, which the, we can, you can tell that story now about how you gave me that gig.
All right. I gave him the gig.
Bill passed.
Bill's famous story.
Bill,
is,
you could have been there when Gallagher pulled this amazing story.
Yeah.
And as I recall, you said that Gallagher showed up, like, I don't know if he was playing. Saturday night,
before or whatever he was. Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead. Be a professional. Turn your phone off. That's nice.
No, that's my phone. It's out on the,
motherfucker.
The kitchen table of the
studio.
What
studios. A rookie move.
And it's a Capital that's One looking fair. For a payment.
Oh, okay.
It's not Capital Records looking to pay you.
All right.
But anyway, so Gallagher shows up, I don't know, Friday night or whatever, if the show was Saturday or Thursday, whatever.
Yeah.
He shows up. He's like, hey, what's up? And then he wanders off into the crowd.
Yeah.
And no one sees him.
He was amongst the Juggalos for 24 hours before the show.
None of the staff sees him for a day.
Exactly.
He's just out in the crowd with the kids at the drug bridge or wherever the hell he is.
Okay.
And no one can find him. And then it's like 20 minutes to showtime.
It's literally showtime.
And you're like, where the fuck is Gallagher?
Gallagher's not there, but the various canned foods are lined up on tables and ready to go.
Does he have a flunky that sets up, or does he have his rider that you have to set up his stuff?
He set up most of it, and for the rest of it, I was his flunky.
Oh, okay. Because I'm sure,
I think he gets a flunky of the night. I think there's a different flunky in every town.
You know, look, if you book Bill Hildebrandt to play your buffet hall or casino or cruise ship or wherever, you know.
Backyard deck house. It doesn't matter. Sure. Tent.
I saw somebody was at a Mormon picnic, and I was like, this, you got to be, or no, an Amish picnic.
An Amish picnic.
I mean, what the hell was this?
Yeah.
So Gallagher, you can't find Gallagher.
Yeah.
You're frantically searching.
I'm looking. I leave the stage tent area looking for Gallagher.
Right. And it turns out that Gallagher is passed out in a pickup truck behind the stage.
It was a Ford Taurus rental car. I thought I found Gallagher dead.
And you're thinking, oh, I'm going to be in the papers.
Well, I'm thinking the Gathering of the Juggalos killed Gallagher. But Gallagher's passed out.
Okay.
In a swimsuit.
No shit.
Yeah. And I'm pounding on the glass to wake Gallagher up.
What time of day is it?
Well, he was scheduled to go on, I think, about 1 a.m.
Oh, okay.
So it's 1 a.m.
Yeah.
But you hadn't seen him since 7 p.m. the previous day.
Because I saw this Ford Taurus, like, backed into, like, some bushes or, like, trees. It was just, like, well, that seems wrong. Let me go investigate.
And this is in a remote location.
Well, this is Cave in Rock, Illinois.
Right, so he couldn't, leave and come back because
it was far
away.
Well, he had a hotel room, but it was probably an hour away. So Gallagher decided to sleep in his car. But, you know, I'm pounding on the glass. Now, remember, I'm dressed as Upchuck the Clown. Pounding on the glass.
And he woke up to that.
Yeah. And he comes out and he's got a Hawaiian shirt completely unbuttoned to the navel, no shoes, and some board shorts on. So Gallagher, we got the show. Gallagher, you gotta hurry up. I mean, there's 1,000 people literally chanting Gallagher's name, waiting for him.
Jeez.
He says, he gets out of the car, he goes in the back seat, grabs the mallet. Puts the mallet over his shoulder and he says,
shit.
I got two bananas and a weenie on stage. Go grab those.
Two what?
Bananas.
Oh, bananas and a weenie.
And a weenie.
Uh huh.
So those are on stage. So I have to go fetch the bananas and weenies.
Yeah.
Give them to Gallagher. And literally within.
Now, that's normally something you do at the Gathering of Juggalos, is gather bananas and weenies for
but
the.
I mean,
hottest thong contest?
Within literally 4 minutes of him being awoken, he was on stage doing an hour. And the bananas and the weenies, the opening joke.
Do people just shout out, Gallagher Shannon, people shout out requests at music, you know, Freebird, all the damn shit. And I'm sure, Dave Chappelle, they're like, do the bit. Do people just go, fruit salad?
Well,
tapioca pudding. They just shout out things they want him to smash.
Well, he has to do 45 minutes of lesbian jokes before
Hearts
he can smash things. So that's what the way Gallagher's act goes. And you know, the watermelon's the closer. So he has, like, the actual food bit.
All right.
Has an, like, okay, imagine you.
Elena,
that's the thing.
Elena had to also explain Ron Popeil,
yeah,
which is what that joke is based on.
The Vegematic, yeah. The Sledgematic.
Sledgematic.
A pun of the Vegematic, which is from the 70s or the 60s.
Yeah. That bit should not have lasted past like 1978.
Well,
you know what I mean? It should have been a short. He did it. He could have done it on Mike Douglas and then moved on.
So Gallagher's food smashing, that portion of his act has like the opening bit, which is rice pudding. I'm not making this up. He actually opens with rice pudding, which he let me smash, I think, in some sort of gratitude for me waking him up and also finding him a working can opener midway through the show, which that's another thing I had to run and do for his ass. Find a working can opener. So I got to smash. I was the first guy to smash anything at the Gallagher show. So
I got a question for you because I've been through this before.
And then the watermelon, it builds up. It's toothpaste. Yeah. And he has his little joke about aim, and he puts the toothpaste down, and
Now,
yeah.
He was trashed.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
But did it show on stage? Because I worked with a guy that I had to wake up once, and the guy was absolutely blasted.
Yeah.
And I'm going, man, this is not going to work.
Yeah.
And when he hit the stage, you had no idea that this guy was as screwed up as he was. And I was going, I've never seen anything like it.
Well,
I'm not talking about Leo DeFore.
You know? No, I was going to say. And we've never seen Jeff Brannon better than he
has
was.
Kippadotta. Kippadotta was the guy. And I'm going, this guy, this isn't going to work.
Has anyone seen Leo sober on stage?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, he quit for a long time.
Well, you know, I think the thing is that, you know, it's just by rote, and you do it, and you've done it a million times, it's just second nature to you, and if you're fucked up, and, you know, I mean, you have to remember, you know, Gallagher kind of talks funny, and he looks like shit.
I've been doing this for 30 years. I can't drink before a show.
I agree with you. I can't either.
I can't do it.
I tell my students not to drink before the show.
Yeah.
And I go, well, I know you think you're going to be Ron White or something with your glass of scotch. Yeah, and I go, a lot of those guys, and I don't know about Ron White, but that's not even a real glass of scotch anyway. And so, I
could certainly not go on stage high.
Yeah, high?
There's lots of guys who smoke, you know.
Yes.
They'll hit a
bong and then go on stage. I could never do that.
Nope.
Probably did a couple open mics at that state.
Sure,
But, like, I could never go on. I could, you know, I'm a light drinker, so I'll have, you know, a cocktail, and that's not a big deal.
Yeah.
But,
well, some people say, I got to go on stage high because I wrote it that way. I've heard that. Oh, you ever hear that line?
Stop it.
Yeah, but see, some people, Doug Benson obviously can function on marijuana.
And right.
I can't. Like, in terms of, if I'm going to smoke weed.
Yeah.
It's not going to be. Yeah.
See, I'm one of those paranoid guys. That's what happens.
Oh, is that what happens?
Yeah. So when I get on stage, these fuckers are looking at me. Why are they doing that?
Well, I mean, I saw the late Charlie Murphy go on stage obliterated. It was terrible.
Yeah.
You know, do you want to segue right into what happened this past week?
New Year's. Let's talk about it then.
Well, Tiffany Haddish. Now, listen, I'm going to be honest when we talk about Tiffany Haddish and Louis C.K. here because they both had New Year's Eve shows that were, newsworthy for their own reasons. I have not listened to any of the audio, seen any of the clips, any of the stuff that's going around. Because my take on, which I'll give you in a second, but Corey, do you have any kind of recap for what Tiffany Haddish did in particular? Because this sounds like one of those.
It sounds like
Tiffany Haddish was at the Gathering of the Juggalos.
Right.
Replace Gallagher for Tiffany Haddish, but replace the Gathering of the Juggalos from Miami Beach, and I think you're right there.
Now,
but
I have not seen, I've only seen clips.
Yeah.
Brief clips of both of these sets.
Mm-hmm.
And Tiffany Haddish had a rowdy crowd.
Yeah.
Which, if you've ever worked on a New Year's Eve as a comedian.
Yeah, we got to talk about that. Yeah.
That's not uncommon.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In fact, that's much like Leo DeFore. It's a natural state to be them blitzed. Yeah. And I'm just going to keep shit on Leo. Anyway, who no one knows. Who could figure out how to get a podcast on iTunes. Anyway, what I'm saying is.
Jeez. Brutal.
He's in rare form.
Bringing it for 2019.
I mean, if I wanted to shit on Leo, I'd take an ad out on Fox News where his audience is. But look, what I'm saying.
Oh, my God. He's angry. He's okay. Fine.
He's Canadian.
He's
as socialist as you can get.
Leo doesn't have a green card. Sorry. You're picking on a guy who's not even
socialized medicine. Yeah.
No, you're right. I'd have to put an ad on Carnaby Street or whatever, EastEnders
BBC.
Or whatever. Yeah. Whatever
Hockey Night in Canada.
Hockey Night in Canada. The Ron Mercer Show. Anyway, this hour has 22 minutes. Anyway. I've only seen little clips of both of these, right?
Yeah.
But Louis got a good response to his material.
Yes.
And Tiffany had a rowdy crowd that she couldn't control.
Exactly.
Which we've seen many times.
Yes.
All kinds of comics, good right. comics, bad yeah. comics. The room is just, particularly on New Year's Eve, the room is out to get you. Or they're just
well,
not, you're a distraction to their good time.
The New Year's Eve crowd is that. It's also couples who have been arguing all day and have paid an exorbitant amount of money to watch a show they could have watched for 10 bucks any other day of the year, and they're not real happy about it. The wife wanted to go. The husband didn't. They dragged him. There's a bunch of couples. Why the fuck did you invite that guy? I hate that fucking guy. You know, it's a lot of that.
It's just got to be earlier in the day. You can't do it close to midnight.
Yeah,
you got to
well,
do it like 8 o'clock. And from 9 o'clock on, they can fuck around
you do,
and do whatever
you,
they want.
You know, at Comedy Castle, we do early show, late show. So have a 10:30 that ends right at the top of the hour. And
being,
you know,
on stage, being on stage when the ball drops is a bad sign.
Yeah, after the ball drops, it's done.
Yeah, after the ball drops.
We're not doing any
which is why the show ends.
It should.
And a lot of times, I've done shows where I was on stage when the ball dropped, or maybe I opened, and then they'll bring you up.
Yeah.
You know, you end up all coming up on stage when the ball drops.
Yeah, that's how we do it at Comedy Castle. Everybody comes out and rings it in.
You're right. You can't do material after that. You got to end.
Yeah. You're done.
And, well, it's a bad night for comedy in general. It's not a night that people, if people aren't, I always say any comedy show is bad if people aren't coming for comedy. On New Year's Eve, they're coming because it's New Year's Eve. When it's your buddy's birthday party, you're going out to see your buddy
if
you don't like the comedy.
If you're in a banquet hall, you're in a bar or something like that. Now, if you come to a comedy club on New Year's Eve, then you're there to see comedy. You know what's going to happen.
But it's not, though.
It's
but it isn't.
No, look, I had my New Year's show this year was great because the people knew what they were there for. And it was early. We got done at 10:30.
Okay.
And I'll tell you what, it couldn't have been a better audience, man. They were well behaved. The place was packed. We had $50,000 worth of light and sound. I mean, it was great.
Requirement number one, which a lot of young guys don't seem to understand when they book shows in ice cream parlors and recycling centers and
what about doing a show on a Sunday brunch, Corey? Does that sound like a good idea?
Right, right.
That's an actual thing.
Okay, doing shows where children and like a toy store or something. Yeah. I mean, you're doing something where children can be enter the room.
That's why you call Tim Rollins.
Right. Yeah.
Juggler.
That's
balloon
why you,
maker.
You call. that's why you call Kevin McPeak. But anyway,
come on, keep going, keep at it. He's firing live bullets.
I'm coming in hot in 2019.
Finish your story.
Saying is you have to have these guys do these shows and they're like, we're doing something alternative, we're doing a, you know, it's a cotton candy factory, and you're like, I feel as if they didn't agree to come to see the show, you're not doing comedy. The number one requirement is the audience has to be a participant, much like what Louis C.K. does off stage. The audience has to give consent to be involved in the show, right? So if you're in a club and it says comedy, you know, it's the Chuckle Barrel or whatever the fuck it is, and somebody walks through the door and says, I paid my money to see a comedian, then you're going to have a show.
Bill,
you can't have a show in we're a bar and we put a comic on.
Bill's experience on New Year's Eve, I think, is not atypical in a sense.
It was.
Because I did a show once. I went with Billy Ray Bauer. We drove separate, and that's part of the story. But we went to some little town, real nice restaurant, and old folks, and I ate a dick, you know, because they just didn't give a shit. And, of course, they ate up all everything Billy Ray did, to his credit, you know. Yeah. And then, you know, I couldn't even drive home because of the snowstorm and spent the night in a fucking $40 hooker motel in Ypsilanti.
Mm.
Fucking Happy New Year.
So you were out.
Comedy.
A $40 hooker.
Something like, well, it was like a $40 hotel.
So you were out. You were
what
out
was the
80,
name of it?
Might have been more than that.
You were out $80 on this game.
Well, you know, that's the thing about it, too.
$40 for the room.
But here's the thing about comics and New Year's Eve, because when we were talking, you know, the other day, Corey, you were like, I'm glad I didn't work New Year's Eve this year. And I go, you know what? As a comic, you want to work New Year's Eve because it usually is a good payday, better than a regular night.
Yes.
And plus, if you're at like a big club, you're like, you know that they wanted to book a good show. So if they choose you to be that act, that means they trust in you.
New Year's was
you're one
always,
of their bigger acts, and that's who you
New
want
Year's
to have.
New Year's was always the big night.
Right.
And I'll tell you what, the first 15 years I was in this silly-ass business, I never missed a New Year's.
Okay.
And then all of a sudden, with the new, 7.08 or whatever the hell it is, you know, for
0.08
or a point
blood alcohol
seven,
content,
I don't know what it is, but you know, it just got lower and shit, and people got afraid, and the banquet hall started booking it, and all these bars started to get a break on their insurance if they didn't have if they weren't open, you know, past 6 or 8 o'clock on New Year's Eve and stuff like that, and so I went 10 years. in a row.
Yeah.
Without doing a New Year's
really?
Show, which was unheard of.
Huh, interesting. Well, but I mean, again, I think you want to do New Year's, man. But I think if you're a young comic and you get booked for New Year's and it doesn't go well, it's yeah, it's kind of like, who cares?
That's killing me.
Because I think that it's for also, me, working at the club and talking to the guys even that we had this year, they were like, I was like fucking pulling teeth out there. I hated this show. Oh, God, I wanted to get off the stage so bad. Can I do less time on this next one? You know, it's a lot of that going on. It's not a night you really want to be performing.
Yeah, it's a lot of
that. That is that sentiment.
I've done a lot of New Year's shows, some good, probably, it's probably 60-40 in the bad to good ratio. But, you know, it's a harder, higher degree of difficulty than normal. So I think grading either of these people on New Year's Eve shows is kind of a problem.
Okay, but
I'm going to give Tiffany Haddish a pass on this because I don't think that the room was really receptive.
Like it was a Miami Beach hotel ballroom or something? I'm trying to remember where it was. Exactly.
And now I'm not going to say I'm a huge fan of Tiffany Haddish's material. I've seen her on SNL and stuff. But I'm not like a super fan of her comedy, so I don't know how a set usually goes for her.
All right.
She was drinking on stage. And all kinds of
let
the master.
Now that Corey's here, Professor, I guess I can leave.
Professor Bill, speak here, please.
He's talking about, you know, how shows work and all this shit, and he's looking at me the entire time like he's teaching me something. I'm just putting up with it. But you know, you go back to, I'll go all the way back. I'm going to step in some shit here.
Please right? do.
I'm going to cause
do.
A problem.
That's the point of this
but
podcast.
But I go all the way back to, with what's his name from Michael Richards?
Michael Richards from Seinfeld.
When he launched on the black guys that wouldn't shut up in a comedy show?
Yeah.
How many times have we been through that?
Well, look, you've wanted to do that, whether you've done it or not.
I didn't launch on him, but how many times is it just like, well, what the fuck?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, shut up.
Yeah.
Well,
what's his name? Bobby Slayton has one of the best lines ever. He says, you can make a movie, you know, white men can't jump.
Yeah.
But you can't make a movie. Black people can't shut the fuck up in a movie theater.
That is one of Bobby's jokes.
Our friend Chris Newberg has a great joke. What did black people do before movies? Yell at books?
Yeah.
Anyway.
All right. Let me play devil's advocate on Tiffany. People paid up to $250 a ticket to see Tiffany Haddish. Does she have some responsibility to at least have her facilities to perform? It's one of those things where, like, yeah, the crowd might suck and they might be drunk and they might not give a shit about you, but you as the performer still has to perform to a certain level.
Yes.
But there is a point. There is a point at which you just can't do a damn thing. I did a gig, the worst gig ever, after 30 years of doing this. I'm saying that in front of Corey because he's only got 19 and a half.
Yeah, he's...
After 30 years of doing this, I did this Zioli gig.
Yeah.
And it was right after...
say no more.
The Hallmark
And it was
quality.
Right after these basketball games. And it was in a bar.
Okay,
And
yeah.
these people were there for the basketball games.
Mm-hmm.
And when the basketball finished, it was all right. And now here's comedy.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what. There had to be 30 people in there. Mm-hmm. 4 people out of 30 paid any goddamn attention to anything we said. It was just, I took video of it.
Yeah.
When the opener went up, I took video just to show Zioli going, you know, because I tried to walk. I said to the guy, so this isn't working.
Did you
this
tell him, keep your money and I'll
keep
leave?
Keep your money. I'm out of here. I'm out, you know, a half hour away from home.
Yeah.
And he got mad.
Oh.
And I'm trying to do him a favor. I'm going, look, you don't understand. You know, this isn't working.
I know how this is going to go.
But
let me out of this.
But let's just say, you know, and I don't know if it's a cultural thing or not, but he didn't really understand the language. So he's not even getting the jokes.
Interesting.
But he didn't understand the concept of, I'm trying to help you out here.
Yeah, yeah.
He goes, you know, work, you know, get paid. I said, yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm not working and I want to get paid. You know, let me the fuck out of here.
Well,
and we did it anyway.
I mean, Tiffany Haddish, I think, unfortunately for her, I think this hurts her in that if you were looking to book her for a lot of money and she's not showing up in
the shape to
do the show, I think she's hurting her.
Yeah,
you know,
I think
we might see her at, you know. Joey's Dearborn was still open, we might see her there in a couple
of
years.
But that's the other look. Another comic said,
"I mean, that's slipping a lot. That's going a long. That's a long fall from Miami Beach to Joey's Dearborn."
Oh, what is it?
Don't tell Gilbert Gottfried.
I think there's a halal market in there now, right? Is it?
Yeah.
Is that what it is?
Grocery store.
You can't even really tell where it was anymore because
they changed the front end.
Yeah, I went and looked at it last summer.
Did you?
You can smell the smoke though coming from. You can smell the cigarette ashes in the building from the manager.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's
Leslie. I couldn't remember her name.
Yeah, no one could.
But what about her love affair with the doorman? Can we just read? Is that going to be made into a Hollywood picture soon, Bill?
No.
What was his name?
Dan.
Dan, poor guy.
Yeah.
This is inside baseball right here. The Tiffany Haddish thing, a comedian on Facebook called her an A-list movie star.
Well,
I'd like to see his B-list.
Well,
I'm not really sure. Like, she's been a co-star in a couple Kevin Hart movies. Let's ease up on the, like,
Corey. Yeah. What universe does this man live in?
Compton.
Well, I'm saying, okay, but my point is, and you've made it, but...
Ever been to Compton?
Yes.
Okay.
The black cinema, black Hollywood is different than
Inglewood,
white Hollywood.
Long Beach.
You know who the greatest movie actors
Mike
are?
Mike Epps is the greatest actor.
Well, no, but I mean, it's like if you have a top 10 rap album, you're now the greatest actor in the history. I mean, right. It's like there's cutoff.
We've talked about this many times.
Yes.
Morris Chestnut is a huge star to black people. White people couldn't pick him up out of a lineup.
Tiffany Haddish
there's a different world.
She's been in two movies that have made money.
Right.
And she's a huge star.
I don't know if I'd call her an A-list movie star.
I mean, whatever. But
she's in movies.
Yeah.
She's having a hot moment. She's having a good career.
A-list name recognition.
Yeah.
Give her that.
I'm not trying to slam her. I think people are being too mean.
No, you would. Why would you do that?
I'm saying people are overreacting to both of these things.
Well, let's...
Because Louis did well in the room he was in.
Yes.
People were laughing at the material.
Tell everybody what the Louis controversy involved.
I didn't see the whole clip.
Somebody recorded his whole show.
Yeah, somebody recorded it.
But the clips are, he made jokes about certain subjects that people found.
I haven't had a chance to watch the whole thing.
And
on
why
YouTube,
would you?
But I've seen a few news stories that had actually.
I haven't heard anything,
it.
So what is it?
All right.
Bring me up.
He had a whole bit about the Parkland shooting kids just got lucky. And maybe they pushed a fat kid in front of the bullet.
Yeah.
You're not special. This is not...
Yikes.
I know, it's not hilarious material.
It's kind of that, hey, millennial snowflake shit, which a lot of guys do.
And then he had...
And people, audiences eat that shit up, but he sort of made... When he made it Parkland, I think some people think he went
And then
over
he had a whole... And I... Personally, I like those kids, and I think that they're...
Yeah, I agree
A lot
with
of
you.
Them are impressive, but in terms of being advocates, you know, and political voices at that age... But and then he said he had something about transgender pronouns and, you know, refer to me as they. And it wasn't his best material, let me tell you, but it was doing well in the room. So also no comedy does well when you put it on a page in a transcript on, you know, a Washington Post story or whatever, Daily News whatever.
Yeah, I know.
Which is what Lenny Bruce got mad, you know, when he was on trial constantly. He would say that the judge is fucking up my material. Yeah. You know, and he'd have to he wanted to read the stuff himself.
You know, why is it when I bring up old comics like Lenny Bruce, I'm an old fart, but he brings it up anything. How can he get away with that?
Well, he's being referential, looking back at history, and you're talking about one of your contemporaries. That's the difference.
The guy, I opened for him. Fuck you guys, both of you.
I never shared a pastrami sandwich with him.
So Judd Apatow.
You knew Rodney Dangerfield when he was Jack Bruce.
He was not Jack Bruce. He was in Cream. Jack Bruce was the bass player.
Wasn't that one of his?
What was his name? I forget his name. Okay. Jack Bruce was the. Jack Place was the bass player in Cream. Judd Apatow called Louis C.K.'s performance hacky, unfunny, shallow. I'm reading. Here's a friend of the show, Tom Kelly. Who checks in? He just had this Facebook thing, and I saved it because I thought.
Sorry,
it was,
Jack Roy. Excuse
Jack
me.
Roy, of course. Yeah. He says stand-up comedy is a subversive art form. He says comedy is about the comedian and the people in the room. I believe in a comedian's freedom of speech. I believe in their listener's right to be offended.
Well, that's true.
And he says, you know, Louis C.K. got a standing ovation.
Yeah, what'd they pay to get in?
Well,
$100 a ticket.
It was a governor's in Levittown, Long Island.
Well,
so this is like
his room.
It's the Joey's Dearborn in New York. You know what I mean? It's right down.
It's going to be a room that's going to I didn't see the whole set, so I don't know what else he did in the act. Yeah. People picked out those two things.
Yeah.
And I will not sit here and pretend I'm going to defend Louis' offstage behavior or backstage behavior.
Right.
Because I still think that's inexplicable and gross. Mm-hmm. And I can't wrap my head around it.
Yeah.
But in terms of being on stage, why is anybody shocked?
Well,
this guy has always done
edgy material.
And I got to say to the liberal community, the progressive community, your orthodoxy is just as open to discussion as conservative orthodoxy.
Okay.
And if you set up a set of conditions in which you cannot discuss things or there are jokes that are not permitted, you're on the wrong fucking side.
Well,
you have to advocate for your position. Eventually your positions will become, and it has over time, there's stuff you can't get away with saying on stage because you can't just go up and be Michael Richards and throw an N-bomb.
That's right.
But that's because you've won that argument in the culture. But if you set the preconditions that this is what you can't talk about, this is what you can talk about, someone's going to challenge you on that and it's going to get ugly.
Well, I think there's two things at play. One is that not all speech is created equal. So a comedian on stage is not the same as an editorial in the New York Times.
Well,
it's just not the same
thing.
Or the president giving a speech or anything like that. The other thing I think is that, the problem with, I've been anti-Louis C.K. If you listen to the show, I go, I don't get the guy, but this guy's a hero to people. When you make him,
I don't get it.
Before the controversy, before the beating off in front of women in hotel rooms against their will came out, everybody made this guy a hero, a modern day philosopher, and said this is the most important voice in the world. And I go, this is a dumb fucking comic.
I don't hear it.
Who pays to be drunk? But so what you're doing is when you're making him important before, now you're saying, well, this is important too. And I'm saying none of it was ever important. It is just entertainment. That's what it's there for. He's trying to make people laugh at governors. He's trying to make people laugh before.
I heard a talk.
You made it important because you believed in it.
Well, 2 years ago.
But now you don't have to.
I heard a talk show guy yesterday on the radio say, why is it that we take these people, and because they're actors and they're comedians and they're writers, that all of a sudden we as a public say, well, they have the right to tell us how to vote. We're going to look to them for our political input.
Because people are dumb.
You know?
People are rock fucking stupid.
You know, if Whoopi Goldberg had been Shaquanda Robinson, nobody would have gave her a second look, you know?
I think her actual real name is Karen. I'm not kidding.
Probably is,
I'm sure it is.
But I mean, you know, she's why did we make her such this political icon? And she stole everything she did. I even saw it in an interview. She said, I borrowed this from so-and-so. I borrowed this from so-and-so. I'm like, what the hell?
Yeah.
But anyway.
Well, it's
Karen Elaine Johnson.
Okay. Well, that's
there
catchy.
There you are. Yeah. Shaniqua Robinson. Sorry. Apologize to any Shaniqua Robinson.
Now, Shaniqua Robinson bombed on a Carnival cruise.
Shaniqua was knocking on the front door with a rolling pin right now. Here's the...
Take that bandana off your head. You're scaring me.
But, you know, I think Louis is a good comic. I think in 2015 or 14 when every open micer was dedicating their lives to him.
Yeah.
Like he was the Sri Ramakrishna, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
He was the Reverend Sun Young Moon or whatever the hell they were all devoting cults to him. And
God's gift to comedy.
He had a bad influence on comedy in that there were 10,000 Louis copycats.
Yes.
You know, that's what happens.
Much
when I got started, everybody wanted to be Robin Williams.
Okay,
Right. Right.
But you've been in the business long enough, you start to see different phases of the Dane Cooks when they all
came out.
And then
there was a bunch of Seinfeld copiers, and there was a bunch of...
Now, this is a good time to ask you guys.
Yeah. Now, when you start in the business,
I want to ask you this question.
Shut up for a minute.
How old were you guys when I met you?
I was 27 when you met me.
It was 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was younger. I was 23, I think.
Yeah.
Wow. 4 years
younger than me.
It's been a long fucking time.
Yeah. But, you know... Everybody kind of, you know, but you see those influences in people. And I think you're right, Corey, that Louis was a guy that everybody wanted to be, and now nobody wants to. But, you know, you can't have it both ways.
Yeah, after Seinfeld, I remember we wanted to wear a sweater on stage.
Yeah.
You know, it was that kind of thing. And it was just.
It's a weird thing. But look, I mean, stop taking what comics say. Nothing a comedian says is important. It really isn't. And if you think it is, well, then you're fucked up. You're already starting out the wrong way.
And talking,
you're looking at stand-up the wrong way.
And talking about these dialogues. Yeah. Talking about, like, progressive versus conservative and stuff like that. The only time I ever feel like I'm under pressure to behave myself about what I say is when I do Ann Arbor.
Okay.
Why is that?
Well, is it all... Is it the college kids that go to this Ann Arbor Comedy Showcase, or is
college
it
town? Yeah,
it's college town.
Well, second show Friday. Are you shitting me? The average, because they let kids in that are 18.
Oh,
and they
okay.
just serve them pop.
Yeah.
The average age in there can be 20, 21 years old.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, at the beginning of my show, when I walk up on stage, I'm going, look, kids, this is not a lecture.
Yeah.
There's okay. nothing of value here.
Yeah, right. right.
I'm not trying to change the world. Sit back, relax, have fun.
But, you know, when I drop Mort Saul references or whatever, and I talk about, you know, the history of comedy, and you go, well, why do you know that? Well, I should know.
I'm
that.
Just making fun because well, I know no, you
but,
do
but
know.
This is, but this is why.
I'm just.
But when that
fun.
Kid, that kid who didn't know who Gallagher was,
right?
I was like, if you're interested in comedy, not that I think Gallagher is the greatest comic that ever lived.
No,
but if you're interested, if you're even remotely interested in comedy, even as a punchline, Gallagher is famous. Or the Mark Maron interview from like 5 years ago where he walked out. You should know who Gallagher is if you're interested
yeah,
in comedy.
I mean,
I'm not saying you should know.
No, actually, and I've told you this. I'm impressed with what you know. I mean, you know, you go so far back. I mean, you've done a lot of detailed research. So I'm just
right because I'm interested in the medium and I'm interested in comedy.
Well, look,
and also
there's a reason
I'm
for that
in
because
history.
You can try to take what used to be cool and what's. Was cool and then is cool now and try to extrapolate where it's going. I mean, that's a good reason to do that.
I'll tell you, I don't know if he was on Hollywood Palace or whatever variety show he was on, which they used the Jerry Lewis set from because when he had a talk show, he spent $30 million on a set. Anyway, there's a Mort Saul clip from one of those shows and he takes out a chalkboard and he breaks down the political spectrum. And he's like, you know, you got the left wing of the left wing and the right wing of the left wing. And then, you know, everybody else is in here. And he drinks it and you change the names. You know, you take out, you know, Hubert Humphrey and you can put in Joe Biden and or whatever.
Yeah.
And the shit matches up.
Yeah.
It's not the ideological perspective doesn't ever change, only the details. And I think some people, young people particularly, are always going to think shit was invented today.
Oh, yeah, of
and
course.
And they're always going to have this whacked
Absolutely,
out perspective.
Absolutely, yeah.
Are you saying we didn't start the fire, Corey?
It's no, we didn't.
Turning.
It's always been burning.
The world's been, it's always, yes. been, always been burning since the world's been turning.
Yes.
That was a very bright man that said that, Corey. I mean, the yes. guy should
was
really...
was George Harrison, wasn't it?
You know, some, one of the... yes. one. I, you know, I forget which Beatle it was, Billy or Bobby yeah. or which guy. But
Stu Sutcliffe.
Yeah, exactly. He's one of the favorite guys. Mm-hmm.
Fred Flernin.
So, yeah, Louis, I mean, look... Lee, you know, look, Louis's been down enough before, you know. What do you want the guy to do?
Okay, I'm not going to...
Although, I saw this on Twitter. Let me just bring this up, because then we'll move on. I saw a guy, and I forget who this was on Twitter, saying, you know, when Richard Pryor burned himself up freebasing, he knew that when he came back on stage, the whole act had to be about himself.
Right.
And Louis doesn't seem to understand that.
He does not.
Yeah.
Jack Parr, when he walked off Tonight Show, came back and went... As I was saying,
yeah.
or whatever, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
he,
yeah.
Right? You have to, like,
yeah.
you have to, and Louis has, seems like he can just go to Governors and do some sets, and it's all going to be fine. And I don't think he's made the appropriate, now, we can debate all day long.
Well, yeah.
I think four of the five women gave him consent
yeah.
to spank it in front
right.
of him.
Yeah.
That doesn't make any of it not weird or disturbing.
Yeah.
But I don't think he properly addressed it.
Sure. Because
people will forgive you.
Yeah.
Pee Wee Herman was a children's considered
yes.
a children's entertainer.
Yeah,
with
his, there you go.
With a Saturday morning show, and he got caught spanking it in
yeah. And you could
public,
argue, you could argue
not the same way Louis was.
But you
doing
could
it.
Argue there was nothing but consent going on with Pee Wee. Anyway, look, Bill Hildebrand, we're going to give you a minute. You've made
no,
notes for
right.
this. No, wait a minute. No, wait a minute. I was going to get to that, Bill. No, see,
wait, you had a list of
like.
Stuff. What
Bill,
is it?
He made a list and he sat down and I know. Look, I said let's get
no.
this. I was going to get into these things before Corey got
all right,
here.
All right,
what do you
what's
got?
Your list? What's
well,
your
no,
list?
No, it's fine. We had some celebrity.
How much time
about
we got
that
left? 5 minutes?
We got all day if you want. We got all day if you want. What do you got, Bill? Let Bill speak,
gonna,
and then we'll talk
I
about Bob Einstein.
I was talk about, well, all right, so let's talk about, since we're on a comedy roll
sure,
here.
Sure, yeah, let's do that. People enjoy this show.
Do they?
I'm talking about comedy.
All right.
A lot of comedians listen to this
Let's talk
show.
About all the new clubs that have opened up.
All
what
right,
the hell's going on with that?
Well, you guys have both played one-night stands in Waterford.
Yeah.
And you guys both had, the review seems to be, good place to perform, they could use some help with the crowds.
Well, it's got to catch on.
Yeah,
I mean,
sure.
It's brand new.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. I heard that this weekend sold out.
Okay.
From Bill Bouchard, who was working there.
Okay. And, New Year's, you know.
Right, yeah, New Year's. Right. Okay. But the shows on Friday were good, too. And, I think it's a top rate. It feels like clubs did 20 years ago.
Yeah, exactly.
It feels like someone cares.
Okay, yeah.
They put a lot of money into it.
Yeah.
Stan's a nice guy, a lot of fun to be around. The whole staff treated you. It was nice to be there because comedy was the job.
Right.
Yeah.
So many of these other places think that, you know,
restaurant is the job.
Comedy is second place.
And, you're second place. And as soon as I get done doing these chicken wings, we'll start the show.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's what used to piss me off about Joey's Dearborn.
Yeah.
You know, fucking Leslie.
Yeah.
You know, she was doing everything. She's bartending.
Yeah.
She's taking money.
Yeah.
And we got to start the show. The place is busy.
Yeah,
and because
it's
busy, she's back helping the bartenders.
Yeah.
And I'm going, we got to start the show, man. It's like 15 minutes late. These people are getting pissed off. Well, we got to get caught up here at the bar.
Yeah.
See, that was primary in her head.
It was.
I'm going, no.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's start the show.
Well, that's why you need a room manager. You
know, well,
who
that's
runs
why
the show.
Joey's was always better when you were there. Because you were running the show and the other.
But
you
I
didn't
still.
Have to,
but I
you still had to listen
get cooperation
to her. Yeah,
to her,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the other places where you're dodging, crab rangoons are flying by your head while you're trying to get your jokes together.
Yeah, I had a bottle of ketchup thrown at me once.
I'm just saying, you're in a hallway where there's...
Should we talk about Chips and Giggles in Ohio?
Oh, God.
Is that
the infamous Chips and Giggles. No.
Chips and Giggles. But,
please,
I mean,
please do. Tell us.
But no, it's fine. But
animatronic cow.
New clubs,
right?
But does this mean that clubs are coming back? There's Sweetwater Entertainment. Did you perform there?
You know, but it's coming sort of back.
Is
but I'll
it?
Tell you, you know what? Here's my fear.
Yeah.
It's little too little too late. I mean, it's just because Sweetwater had a club open up in Grand Blanc.
Yeah, yeah.
And it lasted
6 weeks.
Yeah,
yeah.
And
like
it was done because they didn't know what they were doing. They were a restaurant, and they decided we have this room, and it was a shit room. It was set up all wrong.
Yeah.
You know, and the last show I did there, there was three girls in the audience.
Yeah.
And the guy walks in, the so-called room manager, who was never in the room, says, okay, let's start.
Yeah.
And I looked at him and I said, you got to be shitting me. I'm going to do a show for three women. Are you kidding? And this guy, knowing nothing about comedy, looked at me and said, well, why not?
Yeah.
I mean, he had no idea.
Right.
I said, okay.
You got it. We're going to do it. I worked with this guy by the name of Ziggy. You know who he is?
Ziggy Klett.
Yeah, Ziggy.
Yeah.
Ziggy opens. So I said, Ziggy, here's what we're going to do. We're just going to go up and we're going to tell jokes. We're going to fuck around.
Yeah.
We're going to kill an hour between the two of us, and we're going to say that's it. And this guy, this manager, this knucklehead's not going to know any different.
Yeah.
And that's what we did.
Okay.
It's closed now, by the way.
Yeah,
it's finished.
You closed it.
But I mean, then, you know, that's the stupidity. But there's a new room that I thought was going to be a hopeful deal.
Well,
now,
Stans is doing it right.
Stans is doing it right, but doggone it. You know what's killing comedy? Live comedy? Take a wild guess, Corey. Fucking millennial.
Phones?
God, yes.
Yeah. Phones. Oh, my God.
Why does anybody want to go to a live show?
Yeah.
Pay $10 to $12 a ticket and sit there not pay any attention to the goddamn show.
Well,
sit there on your phone, texting away. And at some point, everybody's going to realize, why am I doing this?
Yeah.
Why do I want to go to a live show if I'm not going to pay any attention
to
it?
People certainly
and
do
everybody
that.
Everybody you call on it, and it's always women. God damn it, ladies, I'm sorry. But, you know, you're the ones on the phones, and when I call you on it from the stage, you go, well, I got a babysitter.
Yeah, you got a babysitter.
So that's why the babysitter's there, so you don't have to be on the fucking phone.
Yeah.
You know, if there's a problem, she'll let you know. And if there's a problem, leave.
Yeah.
You know, if you got to go home, go home.
That is the solution to all of that is just get up and leave, but some people feel like
they don't.
But so, when I look at this, is my job to tell people to not be on their phone. Unfortunately, it's come to that.
But they do.
But this is what they say is, well, if I get up, I'm interrupting more people by walking in front of them than I would be to look at my phone for
no,
a minute
not.
And fire off an
email. No, you're not.
That's what they're. That's their. That's what.
All
they're
right.
Saying.
When you're on your phone and listen up, people. When you're on your phone and I see that blue glow on your face.
Yeah.
That's saying to me, fuck you.
Yeah.
This is more important.
But that's when you need somebody to work in the room.
How often does that happen?
I think.
Where's the last place you did this show? Son of a bitch.
Dave Chappelle will take your, will they have a sleeve thing.
Yeah.
That blocks
I'm not a fan of that, but.
They won't let phones in the theater. And you know what? because Louis' set got released.
He would not want.
I understand
people
why people
it.
Don't want you taping.
Yeah, well, yeah. Ask Michael Richards. Same
but
thing.
But look, I don't think that. I think that the problem is not one of. You know, banning phones doesn't make people want to go to the club. And I think that's the problem with that argument is, you know, you can't say you can't have a phone. People go, well, I'm not going to go.
But that's why I said phones are killing clubs, because that's what it's coming to.
And look,
if I can't be on my phone, I don't want to be here.
But look, as a frequent moviegoer, Corey, phones at the movies has not been a big problem as much as it was in the past. True or false?
It's annoying.
It's annoying, but it's less of it now.
I go.
People are more
but
aware.
They still text.
The movie theaters put up a thing that says to turn your phone off. And it's less of a thing than it used to
but
be.
But every comedy club has to make that announcement.
And we do at the at the
but
castle.
They still
do
it. They still do
I'm
it.
I'm just saying, you have to kind of like. Most of the movies I go to are preview screenings, press screenings. And there's generally a guy there working security for the studio who'll come around and tell you to turn your phone off.
Yeah.
But if you pay and go, people will sit like down in the front row.
That's right.
And they'll be on their phone the whole fucking movie.
You go to Amara's, they're not going to tell anybody to leave if they're on their phone.
And I'm like, why did you come to the movie?
Yeah. I mean,
if you're on your phone the whole time.
That's my point.
So I'm with Bill. Get rid of the phones.
All right.
How does that work on a boat?
There's no reception.
There's no reception, right? So you're
screwed.
They got to sit and listen to you. Yeah.
It's a captured audience, even man. Better. That's why the boats are so cool.
Well, all right. What else is on your paper, Bill? Yeah, I feel like you got it out.
No, we've got.
No,
so
you tore. So, it's that piece.
We got
there,
so far beyond.
No, it's fine.
Beyond
it's,
this.
That's the Corey effect.
This was just,
Bill's got an
that's the Corey
this
effect.
This was all shit in case Corey didn't show up. like the weather. Oh, and we didn't ask the question.
What's the question?
Why were you late?
You don't want the answer. My dad is in bad health, so I've been helping out
every day. We had two answers.
We had Corey Hall late excuse bingo going, and I got.
You want to come over and help?
No, him? Listen. And I said that you
get out of bed.
No, your parents are. You help your parents, and you're a good man for doing that, Corey. But there's always. Bill was entertained by the Corey Hall.
By the way, Corey,
wheel of excuses of being late.
I owe you some money. You're going to have to tell me what you think it's worth.
Oh,
but look at the diversity of this audience. 20 Shades of Chalk.
I'm sorry, man.
But I've used it a couple times.
So look at that.
You let me know what I owe you, man.
Been
that's
using that bit.
Fucking hilarious.
Oh man!
I think you should.
It really works well in a room like Owasso.
That's what I'm talking about.
I look out, and
that's the way to start a show in Alpena. I'm telling you.
No,
what,
you
man.
Look out and you go, "This is the whitest room."
All right, you get 3% of Bill's wages. Hand him a 20, and we'll move on.
Pretty
right?
much, that's it.
Yeah,
I was in Grayling a couple weeks ago.
Yeah,
and my friends live up there because his wife's an obstetrician, and the state said, "Would you go up to Grayling?" And we'll help you with your student loans.
Okay.
It's like a northern exposure situation.
Yeah.
Well, they are literally
northern exposure.
They are literally the Jews in Grayling. there are no other Jews in that town, and every Hanukkah I have to send them the little chocolate coins and stuff.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I send them like Hanukkah supplies because there's nowhere they can get that shit at all. Anywhere around there. So it's not, I'm not kidding about that.
Okay.
It is like, you know, it is, it's guys in camouflage is what it is. Now that was a fun show because the whole town showed up.
Yeah.
Because what else is there? There's three bars there.
Yeah.
But anyway.
All right. Let's do some, you know, we like to cover this when it's newsworthy, Corey. Celebrity deaths. We had three of them. By the way, you know, there's a guy and maybe you can give your thoughts on this before we get into the deaths. And I think, Bill, you've participated as well. There's a guy that's busted my chops to bring back the death pool. Every goddamn minute I see this guy. And you participated in that, didn't you, back then?
No.
You never did the death pool with us?
I don't think I did.
I think PJ did. You're thinking of another bald guy.
I mean, Bouchard did. Some guys did. Yeah. Anyway. And he goes, you gotta goddamn do it. Three guys died today, Joel. Bring back the death pool. I say, I think we're over that.
Nobody would have came up with Captain from Captain to Neil, but nobody would have thought of that one.
But, well,
would be reaching.
Were they all the same age? I think
I don't know. They were a similar age. I don't know how close they were. They were
now,
old guys.
We were doing the Deadpool now, and we're doing Pete Davidson's my number one pick.
Oh, okay.
Because you gotta wager. You gotta take a risk on
the big points on
the
young
big
guy.
Points. Yeah, yeah. Now, do we do like a snake draft? How do we do that?
I
think we generated
we did
a list.
We did, yes. We had a random draw for first, and then we snaked after that.
But if I get the number one pick, I'm taking a big swing for Pete
Davidson.
All
right, well, listen, let's talk about who died. Captain from Captain and Tennille, you're a piano man. Tell us about this guy.
What? They had two hits, and that was it. They were
But they got a variety.
And one of them was
they got a variety show out of it.
Everybody,
which is what you got.
So did Shields and Yarnell.
I know, but that's what you got.
fucking mimes.
I know. Well, let's look.
That's the greatest
Muskrat Love. Yeah. They should have burnt for that.
You know, when people go, "How did this guy get famous?" or "How did this person?" or "How is Tiffany Haddish bombing and still famous?" I want you to know that at one point in this country, mimes had a variety show, a musical variety show.
And, musical variety.
And Edgar Bergen was the most successful ventriloquist on the radio.
Well, on radio, which is
was a goddamn ventriloquist on radio.
Marcel Marceau was a household name.
Yeah, people will watch. What was the 70s had a lot of weird sub. The mime revival was a really weird. Mac Davis had a variety show. Everybody had a goddamn variety show.
You had 70s, you had country music, mimes, roller skating. It was a weird...
Weird things went on.
Weird, I mean...
But it's not any more weirder than today. The mask?
Absolutely.
Are you shitting me?
The mask thing.
Yeah, they take the mask off, and I still don't know who the fuck it is.
That is a problem with that show, I think, and its premise. You know, I haven't had a chance to see it,
you know,
but
I'll check
it out and report.
What if they took the mask off and it was Rey Mysterio under there with a mask?
Like, who?
It was a wrestler.
Yeah, well, okay.
Oh, okay.
Was a guy in the wrestling mask underneath the mask?
I can't see
Captain had to it. Speaking of wrestling, Mean Gene Okerlund died yesterday as well.
We got to get some Mean Gene audio.
You know what? Look, everyone's posting Mean Gene audio. You don't need me to hear that.
I got a 45 at home that I worked on when I worked in a recording studio sung by Bobo Brazil.
Okay, Bobo Brazil.
Called the Cocoa Butt.
Yeah, there you go. That was his big move. That was his headbutt. Yeah.
And he did a song called the Cocoa Butt. I got the 45 at home.
Do you have a credit on that, or are you just engineer?
I was an engineer, cable wiper, microphone setter, upper guy.
But Mean Gene, he was the most famous wrestling interviewer in the world. Now, people go, well, that seems like a dumb job. Anyone can do that. There's been 5,000 wrestling interviewers. You might know, even as a wrestling fan like Corey, I'm guessing you could recall two of them.
Not a lot of them, no.
But, I mean, Gordon Solie's a guy that people will tell you, and he goes way back.
Yeah.
Lance Russell.
Are these national guys?
Well, that's the thing. Wrestling at a point really wasn't national. It was regional.
That's why
And so Gordon Solie worked in Florida, and Lance Russell worked in Memphis.
Not to talk the history of wrestling,
and me, Gene Okerlund, was
prior to the 80s.
The Minnesota guy, yeah.
Prior to the early 80s, and mid-80s, really, it was all territories. And so there would be the Mid-South territory was Oklahoma and Louisiana, and you'd have Memphis.
And they had an actual circuit.
Bobo Brazil was a big star in Detroit.
The Sheik was a big star.
The Sheik had Detroit and Toledo.
Lord Blayton was the interviewer.
Okay.
Yeah. So you'd have a color commentary guy, and Gene was the studio interview promo spot guy. He didn't really call the matches.
No, he was the behind-the-scenes interviewer, the backstage interviewer. Sometimes, later, because WWF went national,
he's the most, and he was great at it. I'd say he was a great straight man, just a perfect straight man. Find the Wendy Richter one.
Well, I'm not finding anything because people can listen to this. Corey's suggesting Wendy Richter will listen to that.
There's somewhere he breaks up.
I'm going to give you an analogy.
There's a great one with Paul Orndorff when he's talking about...
If you want
Ivan
to know,
Putski.
This is an old reference too, but if you want to know what Gene Okerlund really was, he was the Johnny Carson of wrestling in the sense that the personalities got over because he knew when to step back. He knew what to say to get people to say the funny thing or the big line. When the wrestler said something outrageous, Gene would look outraged by it. You can't say that. And he would get in their face and then they'd stick their finger in Gene. Yeah, and he was this little tiny guy and he'd get scared. And you're supposed to do all that.
Theater.
I didn't do backstage interviewing when I was working for Juggalo Championship Wrestling, but I was a ring announcer, and those guys would come in the ring, and Kevin Sullivan, I was backstage with the guy, and we're hanging out, and we're having the best time, and we're buds, and I say his name, and he runs down, chases me around the ring. One guy, the Barbarian, who's this guy, he's like 6'8", got
Harry,
in my face.
Harry Barbarian?
And he's yelling at me about people throwing stuff in the ring, and he's going to kick my ass, and you have to, you have to sell it. You have to look scared. And that was the thing. Yeah, look at that photo. WrestleMania 3, Ricky Steamboat, Randy Savage. That's a signed,
signed by Ricky Steamboat.
But, you know, so Gene Okerlund was that guy. You know, how Johnny would let the guests shine. Gene brought out the best in the wrestlers. He made the matches more desirable to see, and he was great at that. No one else has really ever done that.
And I also found out from a buddy who's in the Navy that Okerlund had a chain of,
yeah, I saw that, yeah,
of Mean Gene's Burgers.
Mean Gene's Burgers on
like Okinawa, yeah, and like military bases, wow, in the Pacific.
So Gene Okerlund, a legendary guy, worked, you know, he was the AWA guy. So that was the regional promotion.
So who's dead guy number three?
Minnesota. What's that?
Who's
we'll get to him in a second.
Oh, okay. Just trying
I'm
to
not
move
done with
along.
Me, Gene.
I'm sorry. Yeah, what do you, I just thought
look,
I'd make a better host.
Sorry you're going to
you.
Die soon. You're gonna be talking, we're going to be talking about Bill in like 30 seconds, so we should hurry up.
All right.
Be your I'm last. Drink
Bill looks great, by the way.
He does look great.
You look, you're in good
well,
shape.
We've talked to Bill since his heart's
hale and hearty.
All right. But so Gene, he's got a 40 ounce out there.
Well, oh, okay.
Just so you know.
Sure.
He's not all that healthy.
Yeah. he's got to talk to a man named Hennessy. Look,
So Gene Okerlund was great.
What do you got? Southern Comfort? What do you got?
You know, any of the Randy Savage stuff with Gene Okerlund is great to
Jesse
watch.
Ventura AWA was really big with him.
Ric Flair in the WCW era in the early 90s with and Rick would go, woo!
But, you know, it does...
Mean, and he would just extend Gene Okerlund's name for 5 minutes. It was
Jesse
great.
Ventura gave him the Mean Gene...
Yeah.
...logo,
yeah.
The moniker because apparently... Jesse would always be like, you know, I was partying with Mick Jagger this weekend.
Yeah.
And he said he'd been partying with Tom Petty.
Yeah.
And he goes, you know who that is, Gene? And he goes, yeah, he's one of the greatest NASCAR drivers of all time. And Jesse's like, that's Mean Gene. So,
right, look at that.
And then that stuck.
Yeah.
And had a great radio voice.
He did. He was a broadcaster, had that whole thing. And, you know, he is the guy that is, there's so few of these guys in their various trades. When you think of the wrestling interviewer, you can really only think of him. You know, he's so much the original, genuine article type guy. Yeah. That
you're not thinking of Tony Schiavone.
No, you're not. And he was good in his own. You know, and Tony Schiavone still calls wrestling.
Right.
I stood in a room with Tony Schiavone for an hour.
My God, let me smell your balls right
now.
Well,
here's the thing. So when I was
down the pants and let me get a big huff of those nuts.
When I was going to take my picture wearing Ric Flair's NWA championship and robe, you could also have Tony Schiavone announce you, like do a backstage interview with Tony Schiavone and pay $50.
Okay.
And very few people did that in the hour I was waiting. About three guys did it.
I think it was.
So I stood with Tony while he sweated and waited for someone to give him money and acknowledge his fame.
Now, I think for $15, you could have Lee Marshall call from the locker room.
Oh, he was at the Nitro party.
Do you remember a guy named Lee Marshall who was a CKLW?
He was a radio
jock.
No. Okay.
Do you remember the CKLW?
Because he did
wrestling. You were around for the CKLW.
CKLW, the Motor City.
That was Dick Burton's station.
There was the boss jock.
For years and years, yeah.
Well,
there was a...
He went there for a while.
Yeah, that's how I remember. I remember first hearing Dick on CKLW before he jumped over to FM, and it was a real big deal when they got him.
Yeah, he was on WXYZ AM for years.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
And then he went to CKLW.
Yeah.
But because he was an American making money in Canada, there was like real tax implications that really kind of screwed him over. So he only lasted a year and then came back.
Okay, but I remember
that was at a big like 50,000, 100,000 watt station or whatever.
CKLW?
Yeah.
No, it wasn't.
But it was a
big
booming station because it was
all right, but it wasn't like WJR. It wasn't 50,000 watts.
Well,
the max
but I remember CKLW playing pop music.
Yeah,
which is so weird to think of AM radio and pop music because now there's almost nothing on AM radio.
Well, there's
musically.
Unless you go up north.
Yeah,
you hit
yeah.
AM and you scan
because it just sounds like such shit.
And then you can hear Captain and Tennille.
All right, we're gonna go way off the. We got one more thing, but Is it true that the records were engineered for AM radio?
Yes.
That when they were cutting the records and they were EQ'd for
car radios.
Yeah.
Yes, that's true.
And that's why when people hear those, you know, the Phil Spector sound.
So they hear the shit now and it's like, oh, you know, they put it on a big stereo system. And
it sounds thin or
it sounds weird. Yeah, because people didn't have that shit.
But one of the CKLW jocks, so they had all these guys, they had the news guys that were like, CKLW, Big Ten.
That's right.
News.
Yeah, Big Ten.
Big Nine, or what was it?
The Big Eight.
Big Eight News.
Yeah.
And they'd be like, you know, she hacked him to death. The bloody scene of destruction.
It was over the top. Yeah.
It was just crazy stuff. But Lee Marshall was one of the jocks there.
Okay.
And later on, he was on WCW Wrestling. And his bit would always be, it's Lee Marshall here, call you from the road in Tampa. You knew he was in the closet.
Well, he was, you know what I mean?
Like, he was never at the location.
The joke was,
well, it's a balmy 73 degrees here on February.
He was hyping up the next show. He was trying to sell tickets to the next show. So the joke on Lee was that Lee was in the next town saying how hyped the fans were getting for next week, big event.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, he was just calling from, you know what I mean? Yeah. But it was like, poor Lee Marshall never got to go to a show because he always had to go to the next town. And you know, it was kind of a gimmick.
It was a great bit. It was like when they would do on Drew and Mike, he'd do the traffic.
Yeah.
And it was just, he picked up the phone and your voice sounds weird.
This audience is too young for this, but on CKLW, they had this news guy. God, I can't remember his first name. His last name was McGregor.
Okay.
Byron McGregor.
And he did, who?
Byron McGregor.
Byron McGregor. Oh, there you go. God. And he did this record in the 70s of JoJo Shetty McGregor. Yes. That's right, the traffic lady.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
And he did this record back in the 70s. Just went nuts.
What was that
about,
called?
It was a record where he didn't sing, he spoke.
Yeah.
And he talked about how Americans, you know, he's tired of people picking on Americans. And this is like 1967.
Okay.
You know, Vietnam War is going south and this, that, and the other thing. And he did this record and the thing just went gold.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And, I'm
tired of people picking on Americans, blah, 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 with music behind it and stuff like that. Yeah.
Kind of like the ballad.
Look it up. See if you can find it.
A spoken word.
Kind of like the ballad.
It was a spoken word deal. Yeah.
Ballad of the Green Beret.
Yeah. Something. Yeah. Well, yeah. At least that has some, you know, lyrics to it. But this was, and this thing just went nuts. It was a monster.
All right.
Byron McGregor. CKLW News.
Those deep voices.
Yeah. He's one of those.
The Americans.
Yeah.
Who stood up and tuck back Iwo Jima. You know, it was just that crap.
Yeah, when the Germans invaded Pearl Harbor, who was there?
I always loved like story songs from the 70s. We had, you know, like Harpy Valley PTA.
Yeah. The Night the Lights Went Out in Georgia.
Sure, yeah. Where they just tell a whole story.
Put purple wings on my son's chest.
Yeah.
Make him one of America's best.
Yeah,
it's a Green Beret song. That's like 1964.
Wow.
Holy shit. Yeah. Sorry.
Well, let's try to run off the
rest
of our audience.
I had a brain cell kick in. So who's last dead?
Well, you know, it's Bob Einstein, the great, some people will know him as Super Dave Osborne.
Some people
will know him as Funkhauser from Curb Your Enthusiasm. Yeah. Some people will know him as a writer for the Smothers Brothers and Steve Martin's writing partner and
Officer G.
Other things.
Yeah, he was a writer for the most part.
Brother of Albert Brooks, son of
All right, so
Park Your Carcass. Corey, what do you want to tell us about?
So wonder he didn't have a show for
Bob Einstein.
Yeah, his dad was Harry Einstein.
Harry Einstein, yes.
Who was in, Fresh Faces of 1939 with Milton Berle.
Yeah.
Not kidding. Or 42.
Died
or
on stage at a
cameo
Friars
by
Club
Bill
Roast.
Cosby. Ben Crosby.
Legendarily, and he had a character called Park Your Car. He was a Greek dialect mumble, you know, whatever, you know.
He was like a wordsmith comic.
Yeah, I can't even explain what that kind of comedy was now.
So did you find the Dave Osborne thing funny at all?
It was a parody of Evel Knievel, essentially.
Yeah,
I thought it was funny. I think it was very dry, and I think some people didn't get that he was doing a shtick. I think some people thought Dave was going to
Found myself tolerating the dialogue until he killed himself. So I could see them throw the dummy into whatever it is.
It was a long, slow build, and he would just play a pompous blowhard.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That, you know, no one has ever attempted to jump this many buses in one time.
We're gonna,
and he'd always just fall off the bike and flop. I remember one where they did the setup was like, we're gonna, you know, this is the most incredible stunt spectacular we've ever seen, and the car is just weaving through everything and hitting everything, and it pulls up, and Dave comes out of the passenger side, and Ray Charles comes out of the driver's side.
I mean, Bob Einstein, right. If you ever want to see...
Now that's funny.
Yeah. You know, in recent years, Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Klaus podcast, great interview with him.
Yeah.
The best guest, I think, ever on Jerry Seinfeld's Comedian in Cars Getting Coffee. He did two of those. Those are on Netflix if you want to watch
I thought the guy was always funny.
But even in recent years, because if you don't want, you know, Smothers Brothers, some people ain't going to watch those or think those are funny.
Think about how amazingly talented that family is.
Yeah, though.
Their father was a famous comedian, a radio. Yeah. He had like a bad back, and so he ended up being a radio comic.
Okay.
And then he was at a roast.
Yeah.
Like a Shriners event, and he
did a set and killed. Yeah.
Apparently, he had a great set and just destroyed the room. Yeah. Went back to the dais, mm-hmm. slumped over in Milton Berle's lap.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And
Lucille Ball was screaming. You hear those stories.
Oh, yeah. And then go, is there? And then Milton Berle gets up and goes, is there a doctor in the house? And people thought it was a joke.
Yeah, no shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, perfect.
Oh. So, Bob Einstein dead. How old was Bob?
76.
Okay, so these things they all
Gene Okerlund.
Gene Okerlund.
Wow.
Gallagher's 72, so we got four more years of that.
Oh, starting the Deadpool. Here we go.
Yeah.
And, hey, you know, I found out Sammy Hagar just turned 71.
Wow.
You want to feel old.
No, thanks.
I didn't think he was going to make it past 55.
Well, he...
Hey-o!
Oh, ba-da-da-da-da. Well,
I should have saved that for when he died.
Keith Richards' license has all the organs he needs. Jeff Brannon,
1983.
Circa.
2014.
Oh, man.
Do you do that after the chalk joke, or do
no,
you do that?
Matter, no, because,
where does that fit in the set?
Brannon,
we're building a
Brannon
set.
Sold that joke to Ron White.
Oh, did he?
And got $2,000 for it.
Okay,
so make all the fun you want.
Way to go.
It was 10 seconds worth of thought,
$2,000
worth of money.
Well played, Jeff.
By the way, that's another thing where...
Jeff's been on this show.
Selling jokes and buying jokes was standard practice in comedy.
Well, it still happens.
For decades. But, like, no, I think for modern guys who started in the last 15, 10 years... They look at that as being just completely... I know there's guys
but they do it and you just don't know about it.
Yeah.
Because what it is...
And I confess to you, I'm doing your shit. So I get some credit for that.
No, but I mean...
If it's one line, I don't really care that much. Although I've had guys do...
No, Corey's had guys do
whole bits.
I've had guys do whole bits.
Well, listen, I'm...
And then
I'm,
they go, they change like two words... You know what I mean? Like, they change,
change the reference to a different name.
If I get a joke about an Oreo, they make it a snickerdoodle.
Right.
Or whatever.
Well, they would change the Keith Richards joke to Gary Busey and say it's a new joke.
That's right. That's
and
right.
And it's not a new
and
joke.
That's horseshit. Right.
But
I had the late, great, a fellow who now passed away, do like 30 minutes of Bill Bouchard's act. Like, the last 20 minutes at least of Bouchard's act.
But that's been going
on. And then he comes up and he goes, oh, yeah, I bought that stuff. And I went, you bought his whole act?
No, well, Corey, that's not new. That's been going on since I got started.
But the point is that I think what you're missing is that these guys who, especially the guys that are doing specials every year, the guys that are constantly touring, they're not writing that stuff because it's just too much. It's too much stuff.
That's what I try to tell
it's
you. Know,
too
well,
much
look,
that's what Louis, but see, Louis C.K. was
well,
a
Louis,
big
Louis was
of,
an advocate of I got to write a new hour every
year.
And then he convinced all of these open micers that they had to write new shit.
Write an hour every year.
Dear civilians that are listening to the show, you're not in comedy. Let me tell you something. After you've got like an hour and a half's worth of shit that you've written and then you make it, you don't write it. You hire people to write the shit.
Pretty much.
And everybody always tells me, this guy, he did a completely different show. Yeah, because he's got 20 guys behind him writing the shit for him, for Christ's sake.
I think that happens to people, though, that Amy Schumer spent, 10 years, 15 years developing her act, and her first album came out and was a big hit. Then she rushed to do the second album,
mm-hmm.
and it wasn't, it was like, I was in a hotel room in Paris and took a shit, and people couldn't relate to it, It was like,
well.
But here's, I'll tell you what, and here's a perfect example of that. Remember when Seinfeld decided he was going to write an entire new hour of stuff?
Yes, he made a movie
and
about
he
went, it.
Yeah, he made Called a movie
Comedian,
about it,
yeah.
and he went, through the country,
and
he tested
everything.
And it was
very hard, yeah.
And you know what? But if you look at the final result, it's really not that good. I'm
it's
sorry.
Not as good as the stuff he was doing.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's my
point. Well, it's
at a certain point you become bankrupt.
Well, it's the band that you know, all the songs they toured on and got signed on was the first record, and then after that, they didn't have any. You know, Van Halen, just not that I'm on a Van Halen kick, but I've been reading a lot about, you know, they're still putting out their demo songs. They cut about 50 demo songs the year they got signed, and the last album they put out was still songs from that demo.
Wow.
Because they just, you know, they wrote what they wrote, and they didn't write.
But you reach a certain point, you hire guys, and all of a sudden you're a genius because you're so damn funny all the time.
Yeah, I mean, but it happens, I think, more. I mean, I forget the guy who wrote for Kevin Hart, but Kevin Hart, this guy, you know, because a lot of them, you know.
Well, there's more than one guy.
But usually they're not credited. And this guy went out and Kevin Hart stiffed him on money. So he went on stage and said, by the way, I wrote all of Kevin Hart's last special.
I mean, I think
Kevin Hart went to war with this guy. It's a whole
thing. I think Bill Burr writes his own stuff.
Yeah, I think there are guys
that do, obviously. You know,
how do you know?
Well, you don't know. I mean, that's the thing.
Dave Attell, I feel like nobody can write that for him. He's a genius.
I'm not buying it.
I know a guy.
But you can take shit and make it your own.
But I'll say this, Richard Pryor, who's largely accepted as, you know, one of the greatest,
the
if not the
standard.
Greatest, right? For years and years, he's been the Citizen Kane of stand-up comics. People know Richard Pryor was the greatest comic ever. No. Paul Mooney was his writer.
Paul Mooney wrote a lot of that stuff, yeah.
And you know...
Jeff Cesario wrote a lot of Dennis Miller stuff.
I think that younger guys get this, like, you can't... You're a sellout and a hack.
But all these guys, all these old guys, you're talking about Richard Pryor, and we can even talk about George Carlin, and even, I don't get no respect.
Rodney.
Towards the end of their careers, you listen to their later shit, it sucks.
Yeah.
It's bad. I mean, George Carlin reached a point in his career where he thought he'd go out on stage and really pretty much talk about anything.
Yeah.
Because he's George Carlin.
Yeah.
And they're going to laugh at him. And they didn't.
When George Carlin died, I remember pulling clips, and we were listening back and going, you know, maybe these weren't... Yeah, I remember that. I remember when George Carlin died, we were playing all of his Hippy Dippy Weatherman and the Seven Dirty Words in baseball.
Yeah.
And they weren't... I mean, you know, they were part of a show, and that show was a good quality show.
No, hold on.
They weren't necessarily funny.
Don't sleep on things to put... Places to put your stuff.
A place to keep my stuff. A place for my
stuff. Don't touch my stuff.
A place for my stuff.
Plane takes off. You look down. People have got all their stuff.
Little pile of stuff.
But that goes back to context.
And if you even read his last book, you know, the first few chapters are coherent, and the last chapters are just shit. Try to make sense out of it. I'm serious. So
he
lost his mind after a while.
I think Pryor lost his mind early on. I read his autobiography, which I don't know who ghost wrote that, but it was like... He was talking about how he wanted to bang Lily Tomlin.
Okay.
But he's like, that just wasn't going to... He didn't lay it out, but I'm like, well, she was a lesbian. That's why that didn't work out. But anyway.
He said one of the funniest things on TV I think I ever saw. It's the first time he appeared on The Tonight Show.
Yeah.
You know where I'm going with this?
No.
Johnny waves him over. He sits down. He says, "Oh, that was very funny stuff." Johnny says, "He says, so you're, what do I call you, Richard? You know, what do your friends call you?" And he said, "Skinny nigger." And that got a huge laugh.
Well, all right then.
On that note, thank you, Bill, for joining us today.
No.
And
look it up. That's what he said.
You know what you can tell, though? You can tell when guys are in interviews. That's when you can tell.
Yeah, well, that's
if
true.
If they're writing their material.
Well, Bob Einstein was
funny. Bob Einstein was on Letterman. He was always funny.
He was unbelievable,
funny.
Yeah.
I think Bob Einstein delivered all the time.
I'm going to have to look at that stuff again because I never thought
much
of it.
Watch Comedians in Cars.
The Super Dave on YouTube and
the Super Dave stuff was very specifically bits, and they were very carefully... tailored to do a one thing.
Yeah, he's got some Carson stuff. Yeah. I'll look it up.
Watch him on the interviews.
Yeah, Bob was one of the funniest guys ever. It's
Pryor
that,
was, on, if you watch Carson on Pryor, he was Pryor on Carson, he would often be kind of pissy. He'd be kind of like, kind of mad about stuff, and it would show through.
Yeah.
So you can really tell when somebody's, you know, doesn't have a staff of writers behind them.
All right. Well, speaking of stuff to watch... We got movies. We got TV.
Let me get this out of the way.
Let me get this over with, all right? Please do.
Dylan's Bird Box.
Yeah, we're going to talk. Let's talk about Bird Box. I think we've all
2 hours of my life I'll never get back.
Yeah, you know, here's the thing.
Enough said.
Well, you know, Bird Box became
I heard that's what killed Bob Einstein.
Bird Box kind of became a meme, I think there's some shenanigans about, I think Netflix is trying to kind of grease the wheels a little bit on this Bird Box thing, because nobody really knows how many people watch the Netflix stuff. They don't publicly release their numbers, and they're the ones that, really the only ones that know it, but they're crowing about, oh, 45 million people watch Bird Box and all stuff, and I'm like, I don't know that people really did. I mean, certainly I watched it because everybody was talking about it, not because I thought it was going to be any good, and then when I watched it, it has its moments, but fuck, it's not a great movie. In fact, the movie, it's very similar to another movie that came out this year.
It doesn't explain anything.
Well, look, it's science fiction.
It's like, it's like Stephen King's The Mist.
Yeah.
Where did all this shit come from? What's the reason for it?
I was reminded of the film version of The Mist.
That's what I was thinking.
Which is a way better movie than Bird Box.
Yes, it is.
And A Quiet Place, which came out earlier this year.
And it's a darker movie.
A way better movie than Bird Box. Yeah.
The Mist is depressing.
I thought that there were some good scenes in Bird Box. A lot of that... people of all ages and ethnicities trapped in a house together felt like basic cable to me.
It's
it felt
the
like The Walking
the
Dead. It is
thing.
The Mist.
Yeah.
I can't really recommend Bird Box.
All right,
I thought it had its moments. I thought the stuff about, you know, Sandra Bullock and the kids in a boat with blindfolds, I thought visually was striking and interesting.
Yeah.
So, but the movie
first
does
10
not
minutes
pay
after
off.
That, it was
the resolution
dark.
Was not that
all right,
great.
I'm waiting for the master, right, Corey, to chime
no,
in
but
here.
This
I want to hear what
Bird,
you have to
Bird
say.
Bird Box is a symptom of the internet amplification of everything.
Yeah.
We have developed a way of speaking that is nothing but hyperbole. Everything has to be the tastiest hamburger you ever had. Oh my God, I never had a quinoa salad this delicious. The internet forces everything through a funnel in which you have to show off about how great your life is. Fear of missing out. Bird Box was overhyped by people who don't watch enough movies. Because fucking A, has it been done a million times? It's a Twilight Zone premise.
It is.
Right? It's a basic... Right? I mean, by the way, watching the Twilight Zone marathon, I think the Twilight... On a side digression...
There's some bad Twilight
Zones. There are some bad Twilight
Zones. There's some real bad Twilight
Zones. On the Twilight Zone marathon, yeah. I feel like I'm in the Twilight Zone because there's always one I haven't seen.
Yeah.
And there was one called The Fear, where it's a sheriff... it's a sheriff and a woman who's isolated in a house in the woods. She's like a fashion editor who wanted to get away from it all, and she's in the woods, and he goes to check on her, and something keeps happening in the, you know, and then his squad car flips over. Then there's big fingerprints on the squad car.
Oh, yeah.
And he goes, and I'm like, okay, well, they're in a doll's house. But it was that there were little tiny aliens who were trying to fool them to think they were giant,
right,
and they had a big inflatable guy. And that's like a rework of
with the one eye.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, look.
And I'd never seen that one before, but they had other ones where Agnes Moorehead had the two little guys that were Earthmen that were invading, and she's the giant.
Yeah.
I'm like, Twilight Zone was a great, brilliant show, but it repeated itself. The Bird Box, it's, let's have an imaginary circumstance in which... There's an apocalypse, and people can't use their eyes, and I've seen this shit. There was a movie called The Signal from like 6 years ago where there was a sound that made everybody crazy. And you're
The Mist.
Yes.
A Quiet Place.
And The Crazies. And there's it's like, it's a rip-off.
And The Cell.
Yeah, exactly.
The Mist. I mean, the Sandra Bullock movie and The Mist, not The Mist, but The Cell, the Stephen King book.
Okay.
Yeah, a lot of similarities.
Okay, but the point is, the problem with Bird Box isn't that it's an old premise. It's execution. Because the reason, two people fall in love is a premise for every movie, and people still love that. It's the problem with it is that it feels like two different movies slammed together. There's the stuff the flashbacks and the present stuff.
It was okay.
It was fine.
But the problem was people acted like it was a rapture.
Well, it's...
The other thing is
John Malkovich. What the hell is wrong with you?
Well, he's chewing the scenery in a way that you don't see a lot of guys.
Do
that.
Bird Box belongs to a subgenre. This is part of the reason it was inflated, of the apocalypse as a metaphor for parenting.
Okay.
The Road.
Yeah.
Is that the guy has to keep his kid protected from all the raving lunatics on the road? Right.
Yes.
Bird Box. A Quiet Place.
Yeah.
These are all like how hard it is to be a parent.
Sure.
If you're not a parent, you're not going to give a shit about that premise.
I know there's a reason we had him here.
And it also...
I'm starting to rethink those reasons, but okay.
Okay, and you know the people who liked Bird Box?
Yeah.
Women.
Well, that's true.
And things that are for women.
Well, yeah, because it's a strong woman and she gets the kids through. And I am woman, hear me snore.
You know what the greatest show on television is, according to white women? White women under 50? The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
Yes.
Because it's a fantasy about hats.
Yeah.
I'm not having the fantasy they're having about, wouldn't it be great if I wore opera gloves in the daytime? And it's about a brassy, obnoxious Jewish comedian who everybody just thinks is adorable and loves. And that's not how the shit was in 1962.
I haven't seen it yet.
Joan
Rivers
much.
Had to fight for every inch that she got.
Yeah.
And this woman is kind of like...
Phyllis Diller, same way.
You're hysterical.
Well,
you know what I mean? I think
the show is loosely based on them, I think. Yeah.
But it's a soap opera.
I've heard about it. I haven't
seen it.
It's
a fantasized version of what that would have been.
They have a guy playing Lenny Bruce.
They do,
in the show. Hmm. And Lenny's the hipster guy. He's kegs out with all the jazz cats in the band and smokes reefer. And which is accurate.
Yeah.
But he also like promotes her career and helps her out and like gives her a note which by the way, Lenny gave Joan Rivers a note that was like, you're right, they're wrong, and she kept it in her like closet for the rest of her life. And Lenny was a good guy, but at no point does he try to fuck this girl. And I'm like, I'm calling bullshit on that.
All right.
I'm calling complete bullshit on that. Lenny would have tried to get in those panties.
All right. Is he overmodulating over there?
Yeah, I don't know what he's doing. There's people that listen to the show that say I can't hear Corey, and I go, that's because he screams and I turn him down and then he whispers.
That's bullshit.
And you know, Corey,
you can hear him without the microphone.
God forbid I entertain people.
Well, I mean, there's a reason radio guys talk a certain way. And it's a technical reason. Am I correct, Bill?
No, because they're Jim Harper and they've got no talent.
No, all right?
And they sound like they're doing radio.
It's a way that it's a way that a microphone works.
This is Byron McGregor, CKLW News.
Oh, my God.
That's
all right.
Let's put on our radio voices.
All right, well, let's stay on.
Joel, what's next on the agenda?
Well, Corey, up now on the agenda.
I'll tell you what, I just can't wait to see what's next here.
Didn't Howard Stern...
95.5 Joel and Corey Radio.
Yeah, that's right.
Good God, y'all.
Now, didn't Howard Stern, who I think actually does have a good radio voice,
yes.
but...
No,
He came through the radio tradition.
He did, yes.
He was trained that way, but he's
he can enunciate, but there's nothing, you know, tonation wise sets him apart.
Well, that's true, but he's obviously one of the great.
You have a good radio voice. I got one, Joel.
Well, I'm not doing.
He's the trill voice.
I'm a professional ring announcer, and I think I have a voice for that.
It's interesting.
I don't talk like this.
And you're a clown, I forgot.
Sometimes when I go on NPR...
The clown talks like this.
When I go on NPR, I have to change. I have to sound
like NPR
this.
Is well, yeah, so you gotta twee
sound,
and...
Yeah. I have to sound more sophisticated.
You got
to
sound smart.
Well, here's the thing. Let's stay on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
Ladies and gentlemen, Netflix, America's premier streaming service.
Let's do it as NPR.
Let's not.
Okay.
There's a great documentary on Netflix called Film Worker. About Stanley Kubrick's assistant. That's really good. You should check that out. It came out this year. It may be in the... I don't know if it's... I don't think that made the Oscar shortlist for documentaries because I'm going through those right now. But you got to see this guy. Well, I forget what this guy's name is. I should have it in front of me. But he was a guy... He was one of the actors in Barry Lyndon. He was a Shakespearean actor. And he really liked...
He got cast in Barry Lyndon.
And he said, I really like working with Kubrick, and I can do all
these movies.
Right,
he became an assistant, and he gave up acting and did, yeah, I saw it.
And worked for Stanley Kubrick, and you hear all of Stanley's, and now he's the guy that really carries out Stanley's wishes when it comes to home video.
He's got all the films.
And yeah, he controls the archives, Stanley Kubrick, and it's brilliant, and boy, what a peek into the mind of Stanley Kubrick. Huh?
I know.
It's a cool movie. You guys, if you're a film guy, now look, if you don't know Stanley Kubrick and you haven't seen those movies, I don't think you're going to get anything out of this really necessarily. But when you understand, it really is a profile as much of Stanley Kubrick as it is the film worker as it, because they were saying that's where the title of the documentary comes from. Where
I have
says,
not seen it yet.
Yeah, you got to catch it. I want to hear your take on it.
I think wasn't it he was filling out his passport or something, and they said, "What is?" And he says, "Well, what is my job title?" And he says, "Film worker." He does whatever Stanley Kubrick asks.
Yeah.
And there's some really cool stuff in there. Really good behind the scenes stuff.
I saw it. You're right.
With Kubrick and really interesting stuff there. So the world of Stanley Kubrick, very secretive. And there's been some things that have come out in the last few years about him.
And he did some goofy stuff. But I'll tell you what, the one thing about Kubrick movies, and this is a visual thing.
Yeah.
Is he's just so into columns. He's into the right side of the screen matches the left side of the screen. Everything is always in the hallways.
He was a still photographer.
It's always, everything always kind of matches. It's always
framing
balanced.
And composition.
Yeah. Yep. Very cool.
Yeah, Filmworker's real good. You should definitely check that out if you love movies. And, you know, if you don't want to watch Bird Box. I suggest this, but what can I tell you?
Initially, I was trying to find Bird Box, and I found Bird Bath, and it was 2 hours of Soupy Sales. So
hey-o!
Thank you.
We've told the Soupy stories many times on this show.
Jim McClain's told them on the show.
I'm talking about peeing in the
champagne bucket and getting a blowjob in the back of a limo.
Yeah, all that
Soupy
shit.
Was the
never wore underwear, never wore socks.
Good times with Soupy.
You go in the green room where he's at, and he's lying there with a towel over him because he didn't have any underwear.
Why was it that Soupy was an old Jew that talked like Nat Cannonball Adderley?
He loved jazz.
Yeah. He did? Is that why he talked like that?
Yeah, he did. He was a jazz guy. He's a drummer.
He talked like this.
Well, you told me the story about at the Ann Arbor Comedy Showcase. Soupy's on stage, right? Tell you know what I'm going to?
No.
The guy in the audience, I'm going to step on your story.
No, go ahead.
I thought it was you. Soupy's on stage. That old crowd, a guy dies in the audience.
Oh, that was...
Soupy says...
No, that was it. That was,
Soupy
that,
says,
that
hey,
was, no, that
come
was,
out and bill and do some more time while they haul this guy away. And then Soupy, is that... What did I get wrong?
No, that was Joey's when the one they had in... '94, it was down there. But yeah, this guy passed out in the middle.
Joey's West?
Yeah. Joey's Southwest.
Joey's South.
Joey's Northeast.
Canton. It was in Canton.
Joey's Canton.
By the way,
we have an imaginary line that we determine how old a guy is in comedy.
Yeah, and what's the imaginary line?
When they talk about Chaplin's West.
Chaplin's West is the delineator.
Because that was all before our time.
That was just before we started. But
and,
anyway.
What a great club, man. Too
was
bad.
It? Yeah, that's what everyone says. That's what everyone says.
It was
Chaplin's
perfect.
West.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So Soupy died and sent you out?
This guy passes out in the restaurant, and the first thing Soupy says is, did he eat here? Because he ate there.
Yeah, okay.
And he's afraid this guy's got food poisoning. Right. That was the first thing in his mind is, I'm worried about this. So then he says, hey, Bill, you want to come out and do a few minutes?
So and he did?
What choice did I have?
Yeah, exactly.
So he disappears. I go out, and all I'm doing is stalling while the ambulance comes down. Right. They do CPR on the guy. They finally bring him to, you know, and I never seen a guy have a heart attack, and he was as gray as this goddamn piece of cloth here. And they hauled him out, but it took 20 minutes. I'm doing 20 minutes of jokes, you know. You know why did
that's a pro.
The road?
He knew it would be a tough room while they're hauling a
they
guy.
They finally
out
got the guy out of there, and he came back out and finished the show, and it's like nothing happened.
Oh man, all right,
how weird is that?
Let's jump over. If you got, I'm getting a free month of Hulu, Corey. That's what I'm doing right now. I'm living that life.
How's Hulu different from Netflix?
Hulu. He has Hulu.
How's it different?
Hulu is if you cut the cord on your cable.
Yeah.
Hulu has more networky shows and
it
more
has
like
three of the four big networks,
and it's got
and
HGTV
it
and a
stuff,
bunch of that stuff.
Yeah.
So if you were trying to get rid of your cable, it would have more options.
But they are expanding.
They have their own original.
Yeah, they're expanding into originals. They do a lot of documentaries. I was talking about the Oscar shortlist for documentaries, which is something like 15 films, many of which I haven't seen. But they have three of them on their service now. I've seen two of them. One of them is called Minding the Gap, which is about when a movie opens, it's about these young kids skateboarding in Rockford, Illinois. Now, Rockford, Illinois, have you ever done stand-up in Rockford?
Yes,
it's
I have.
It's a piece of shit, right? Rockford
there's a place. There was a place called the Clock Tower, which is a hotel there where the giant clock is. Uh-huh. And then there was a restaurant there that had stairs that went down into the basement, and there was walls around it so you wouldn't fall in.
Yeah.
And that's where they put the stage was on top,
on top
of those walls.
Yeah, I don't know
so
if I did either
So if you stepped off,
those,
you'd have been done. But I've done Rockford twice.
Rockford's kind of a tough town. It's northwest Illinois, almost Wisconsin.
It's where Kippadotta's
Spoiler alert, anything south of Joliet in Illinois is a shithole.
So anyway, no, this is north. This is northwest.
This is right by the line.
This is almost Wisconsin.
Yep.
But anyway,
yep.
So there's these kids, and you see them, and they're skateboarding, and you go, okay, it's a skateboarding documentary. What you realize is that these kids kids. One kid's black, one kid's white, one kid's Asian. The Asian kid shot all this footage, directed the movie. They didn't have great upbringings. It goes into their past. You see clips of these kids from when they're 12 until they're in their 20s. So it spans this great length of time.
Okay.
And it's sad because what you see is that the mistakes their parents made and the way that they were brought up, as they get older, they start to make those same mistakes. You see some of the kids trying to overcome their environment.
Called?
It's called Minding the Gap. It's kind of depressing, but it was very good.
Okay.
I thought it was very good. Again, not a good time, fun, party, date movie. But if you like something, the filmmaking's real good. And again, the skateboarding stuff ends up being incidental. I thought it was, because even the title, Minding the Gap, I think is a skateboarding term.
You've
but
never
yeah,
skateboarded?
No. Believe it or not.
Go figure.
Yeah. Who knew? I was very good at Tony Hawk Pro Skater 2 through 4.
I had a skateboard and played with it and could fell off it pretty good. But
you know, this movie's not about skateboarding. It is the backdrop to a story about, you know, young people trying to become adults. It was very interesting. So
right.
I don't know if you've had a chance to check that out, Corey.
There's so many goddamn things. How am I going to watch
it? Well, because this is one of the best things, so
that's
I sought it out.
Oh,
that's
geez.
Why I got a free
No,
month
I had
of
to
Hulu.
Watch Bird Box.
Well, fuck you then. Here's what else you're not watching, Corey. There's another documentary on the short list for the Oscar called Crime and Punishment. It's actually Crime Plus, this plus symbol. And this is on, it's about whistleblowers in the NYPD. And about how Mayor Bill de Blasio and his police commissioner had quotas in place for arrests. And the young people that were profiled. And how I believe it was it 10, 12 police officers came forth and spoke out against the police department. It's real big city shit, man. Huh. It's very much modern day Serpico, if you remember that.
Bill. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's very modern day Serpico. Very good. Long documentary, about 2 hours, 40 minutes, but real cool stuff in there. One kid's accused of, firing a weapon, you know, and he's in jail. He's on Rikers. And you see this private detective who's a retired cop, and he's investigating, trying to get these charges overturned. And it's a series of these little stories. A black cop who wasn't promoted, even though he was in the 85th percentile when it came to police officers. Why wasn't he promoted? Well, because he had dreadlocks. So he files suit. NYPD, it's real big city stuff, real kind of, well, you know, hey, look. I'm sorry.
Sorry.
I'm sure there's a...
It's all right. I haven't been listening for...
Crime Plus Punishment. Well, I'm trying to give people good stuff to watch so they don't have to watch fucking...
No, that's different.
So Crime Plus Punishment.
My dad was a cop, so I'm kind of half interested.
Yeah, it's a real good. If you like...
But I told him I went and saw the movie Serpico, and my dad goes, yeah, fucking squealer.
Yeah, and that was what he got. And so did these guys. And you see these guys... Go on, I think it was the NBC affiliate New York give this big interview. Then you see him on the job the next day, and the sergeant says, oh, by the way, you're going to stand on this street corner, and you're not allowed to move, and it's freezing cold out.
Yeah.
Because you just see all that, and it's crazy to see, big city politics.
Right.
So Crime Plus Punishment was real
out.
Good. Mining the Gap was
that's,
real good.
That's Hulu, though, right?
That's on Hulu, so you got to stream that shit.
All right.
Get your Hulu.
I'll check it out.
It's free for a month, so do that, won't you? And then let's go to the theater. You know, you were talking about The Favorite last show. I went and saw it, loved the first two-thirds of that movie, and thought the last third wasn't as good as...
What is it?
It's a letdown. It's called The Favorite. Costume drama with Emma Stone.
It's about Queen Anne's court.
Yeah.
And the two women that are fighting for the control of the privy purse.
Yeah.
And you've got Emma Stone and Rachel Weisz, and there's a lot of... shenanigans,
yeah, it's
and
shenanigans.
Romantic entanglements.
Yeah,
and,
it was.
It's a brilliantly funny movie. I think it fell apart maybe the last 10 minutes.
Yeah, I agree. I
it
think
got a little slow, but it's brilliantly funny up until
I guess
a lot of mean, nasty comments and backstabbing.
It's real highfalutin stuff. And, you know, I'm not putting it down because of that, but I thought that to me, you know, all movies are stories. These documentaries are stories. To me, Emma Stone's character went on a journey. That journey ended two-thirds of the way through the movie, and the rest of it was kind of just filler.
I did go to a theater.
What'd you see?
I went and saw The Mule.
The Mule. I have not seen that. What, Corey?
Was not screened for critics,
all right,
so
well,
I did not see it.
Bill, what do you think? Clint Eastwood's newest directorial effort. He stars in The Mule. Tell us about The Mule, Bill.
A man's got to know his limitations. apparently Clint Eastwood doesn't. No. You know, it was an okay movie.
Did he forget how many bullets were in the chamber?
But it was it was so predictable.
I forget, Punk. Did I shoot five or six?
Yeah. Do you feel lucky, Punk? Well, do you?
Well, he felt lucky enough to put himself in this movie.
And it's what was the El Camino El Dorado movie?
Yeah.
It's the same Grand thing Torino, all over again. Yeah. An old guy at the end really kind of dives on the grenade for his family. You know, you saw
Clint's
it coming.
Clint's been doing that I'm too old for this shit movie since like Heartbreak Ridge.
That's my point.
In the 80s. He's been doing this for 35 years. Yep.
One last go around.
I'll tell you what, trust me, he's finally right.
So you're not recommending The Mule?
Yeah, if it comes out on Hulu and or Netflix, go ahead. But don't go to a theater and catch it.
Steal this from your local.
And the pacing was bad. I didn't care for the pacing. It was a little
on the slow
side.
Clint really is credited with being a great director, if you look at his body of work.
Yeah.
But, you know, everybody loses their fastball at a point. Yeah. And,
he lost his fastball and his spitter and his curve. It's really a mess now.
And he wasn't wearing a coat.
But you didn't see it.
Was not.
You're talking out your ass.
Was not. No,
bit.
But I've seen his last few movies.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
It's sad.
Yeah,
it's
trouble with the curve.
Look, Kubrick, Eyes Wide Shut wasn't Kubrick's best thing, and he dropped dead right after he finished editing.
That was better than most people's movies.
Yeah, though. It really was.
It was even Kubrick's worst.
All right, Corey, and I'm going to turn this over to you even though I saw it first. Because I saw you talking about this, and I know you had a lot of thoughts. So tell us about Vice. The new movie, the story of Dick Cheney starring Christian Bale, Amy Adams is the wife. Tell us about Vice.
The story of who?
Dick Cheney.
Dick Cheney.
I haven't heard about
former vice
this.
President. Well, he's going to tell you about
it. I think it's gotten five or six Golden Globe nominations, and it'll probably be Oscar nominated.
That doesn't mean anything.
Christian Bale will, I guarantee, be nominated.
But is the movie worth that attention?
I think it's a good movie. It's a very weird feeling because it's a deconstructionist biopic. It's a biopic about a villain who thinks he's the hero. And it's about just how Dick Cheney, who's maybe the most uncharismatic politician we've ever had.
Yeah.
Like just no one even, no one in his own party liked him. But he managed to maneuver his way to power. And they basically, Amy Adams plays his wife and she's kind of, she gives him, he's a drunk. He dropped out of Yale and was a lineman in Wyoming.
Yeah.
And he was just a drunken lout and getting in bar fights. And Amy Adams basically gives him a speech where she's like, look, I got 13 guys lined up to date me, including a couple professors.
Yeah.
So get your shit together, be a better man, and do something with your life.
And he did.
And what he does is, of course, cheat, steal, connive. Then he authorizes torture. Maneuvers his way through politics.
It's
the way it's done structurally is very clever.
Right.
There's a point in the movie where they roll the credits in the middle.
Yeah, that was great.
It, which is like a big punchline where they're like, and they were never heard from again. But Sam Rockwell is Bush.
George W. Bush.
He's not in it for very much, but he's always terrific.
He has kind of a phony nose to make him a little more
Bush. Yeah, but he's a great Bush.
Just to be fair and balanced, then, did you see Chappaquiddick?
You know, I didn't see Chappaquiddick, but I will.
I've heard it wasn't great, but anyway. But here's the thing about Vice.
It's not a matter of. I'm not talking about the film. I'm talking about the story.
Well, the story's great.
Oh shit!
Yeah.
It's
sometimes
crazy.
The story's so good that the movie can't be as good as the real story, which is why usually in these cases the documentary's better than the dramatic tale of it. But Vice is so interesting. Okay, let me sell you on Vice a little bit, Bill.
Okay.
Imagine,
you don't have to sell me. Sounds interesting.
Imagine the director of Talladega Nights with Will Ferrell taking on an important historical subject. Now can I have your money? But here's the thing. Adam McKay made a movie
What's your point?
Well, my point is that this is not a guy that you might think would cover this kind of ground and make a film like this. But he made a movie called The Big Short.
One of my favorite directors is a guy that went from one genre to another.
Yeah, no, that's what I mean.
Bob
I'm giving
Weiss.
Him credit.
Okay.
Bob Weiss did The Day the Earth Stood Still and then did The West Side Story.
Okay,
I mean, come on, talk
but
about
here's the
jumping.
Thing. I went and saw Vice with my girlfriend, and
the tomato meter on that is not great.
And that's what's interesting is this is a 64%
tomato meter on the girlfriend or the movie.
Well, it's what is.
I think this girlfriend likes.
Have you seen my girlfriend's tomatoes, Bill?
No, I haven't. That's why I'm asking.
I think she likes tomatoes. I can tell you that much. Look.
It is shockingly low, Corey.
Yeah, well, you know why? Because it's, look.
Tomatoes is the critics, right?
Well,
it's a critics composite.
And the audience. Popcorn is the audience.
The tomato is the critics.
Gives you both. It gives you the critics and the audience.
It's 56% audience, 64% critics. That's the take on it. Now, when I read the critiques of Vice, they say, well, you know, it's left-wing propaganda. It's too hard on, you know, the Republicans. Now, here's what I will say about this. Listen, I'm the first guy to call bullshit on the left. And they're you know, and look, both sides are full of shit. But, you know, some people on the left think that the left's never full of shit, and they are. Here's the thing about Vice, and you can say that first of all, the movie is so interesting that, you know, there is a focus group in the movie that is reviewing, you know, presidential policies or, you know, political, and you see them, and then when the movie ends, they come back, and you see the focus group talking about the movie, and two guys get in a fist fight. It's great. I'm kind of ruining the
end.
But here's the thing about it is, the stuff that I know, and I'm a guy who followed politics way more closely back when Cheney, not so much in Nixon because I was too young, but during the Bush administration, I followed it very closely. I don't think they made up a fucking thing for this thing. It's all true. Now, you can look at it, and certainly there's scenes where, you know, Cheney is quietly admiring the Oval Office with kind of a sinister music below it, and you could go, okay, what was his mindset? But the decisions that he made that the record reflects, that's what the movie has. So,
the Democrats are even like an abstraction in this movie.
Yeah,
like there's nobody playing. You know what I mean? Like, you'll see a clip of Obama getting sworn in, you know, but like you never see. It's really all about the Republicans and what he did behind the scenes.
Now,
so, and that, I mean, level, it's not even, the Democrats aren't even there.
And even though you can make the argument in defense of Cheney to say, well, look, Cheney was doing what he thought was best at the time. And there's even a scene towards the end of the movie where Cheney, you know, Christian Bale as Cheney addresses the camera and basically says that exact thing. What would you do in my shoes? And so the movie really is about as fair as you can make. Dick Cheney, it was a movie about a guy who's the worst person that ever lived. And it's the most fair thing you'll ever make. I thought the filmmaking was incredible. I think this guy, I don't want to say it's Oliver Stone because it's a different style, but you can almost see that Adam McKay is developing his own style for these sort of real life subject movies.
At times it feels like Rob Reiner and Michael Moore made a movie together.
Right. No, it's
you know what I mean?
It's Oliver Stone meets an SNL sketch, and they're all happening simultaneously.
But Amy Adams and Christian Bale are great.
Yeah.
They're two of the greatest Hollywood actors.
Yeah.
And Bale said he's like, I'm not going to do this anymore, but he can't help but do a movie where he doesn't look like himself.
Yeah.
And he must have just eaten, you know,
he really looks like Dick Cheney. I mean, this is a shot of a younger Dick Cheney here, but when you see him as Dick Cheney, who was the president or the vice president, he looks exactly like the fucking guy. It's amazing.
You don't even realize Christian Bale's in the movie, really.
Yeah, it's...
And he must have just eaten buckets of Rocky Road every day.
Yeah, I mean, look, if you want to go to this film with your biases and say, you know, Dick Cheney was this great guy, or if you want to go... But you literally, but as a piece of film, film, I mean, look, I know we're going to do our show with the best movies of the year. Somebody's gonna have to kick me in the nuts for this not to be my number one movie of the year.
It's
incredible. I was blown away. And my girlfriend, who certainly this was all new to her, she don't give a shit about Dick Cheney.
Yeah,
she thought it was great.
Yeah. I had it on my top 10 list. Not at number one, but it was on the list.
Hulu. It's not in theaters.
No, it's in theaters.
Oh, it is.
Yeah, we worked our way from streaming all the way up through Hulu
to the
theater.
Help out the old guy here every once in a while. Tell me what's digital, what's not.
I'll tell you what. It's in the theater, and I will say that from the perspective of the movie. Now, my film group is probably going to be like,
they haven't seen it yet?
No, we haven't talked about it yet. They've seen it.
They've seen it, but you haven't talked
about it. And I know they're going to all be like, why did you make us watch this movie? Because they're not going to like him. He's kind of a repellent dude.
Yeah.
But that's not the point. The point is, and you're not supposed to like him. He's the anti-hero in
the
movie. It's a movie about how he manipulated people and achieved his goals.
Yeah.
And the structure of how they tell it, you're right.
It's unbelievable.
It's fourth wall breaking and clever.
It's clever and brilliant. I mean, this is the movie as I'm watching all of these Oscar movies and I talk about them, and a lot of them I'm liking, you know, for the most part. Nothing has really grabbed me this year until this.
Oh.
I mean, I thought Star is Born was nice, but it was a little pedestrian, you know. First Man was good, but it was kind of dry, you know. They made the First Man in Flight boring, but it's still a good movie. This thing was great.
First Man really missed the mark a little
bit. But I mean, Vice is taking a subject that should bore the because even like, you know, yeah. Oliver Stone made W about Bush, and that was okay. But this thing kicks that thing pisses all
it's
over
better
that.
Than W,
it's
yeah.
unbelievably great. This yeah. thing's I mean, and I even thought Big Short, which did stuff. Big Short was about the mortgage crisis and, you know, short selling. His mortgages is a big thing, but Adam McKay made it funny. He made it relatable.
You know, they're doing things like they're trying to explain, you know, stock dividend buybacks yeah. and shorting the market. Yeah. And they go Margot Robbie in a bathtub.
Yeah, they send Margot Robbie
champagne.
In a bathtub.
Let's have her explain that, like yeah. the most boring financial details.
And they get this hot
blonde. She's in bubbles
you,
with
yeah.
a champagne glass.
So I mean, that was in The Big Short, and
they do similar things in this.
All right, I should probably ask Corey this off. Yeah. When
By
we're
the way,
done with this show, so I'm not taking up any
yeah.
time.
Yeah.
I've only seen two movies in a theater in the past 12 months.
Yeah.
And now I can't think of the name of this one. Science fiction. It's all about chicks. They go into this area.
Annihilation.
Annihilation
yeah.
was great.
Did you see
yeah.
Annihilation?
I thought it was real good. Yeah.
You liked
yeah,
it?
Annihilation was good.
I thought it was interesting. I mean, it was a little bit of a different approach.
Yeah, I liked okay. Annihilation.
Right. Okay. Didn't make my top 10 list, but it
no.
was. It was
all right. Okay.
What was his other movie? He should watch that.
What?
That same director.
Oh,
the movie with, you know.
I know.
We both know what we're talking about.
I know. We're getting old.
Ex Machina.
Ex Machina.
There's a movie called Ex Machina, same director as Annihilation, that was really
yeah,
good.
Really?
Oscar Isaac was in that.
Alex Garland.
What's that about?
Alex Garland.
That's about,
don't say about 2 hours. I'll
no,
punch
it's,
in
it's about it's about artificial intelligence.
Yeah.
Robots.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah. Human Alicia Vikander is the robot.
God,
cool
I think
movie.
I saw it.
It's about
Ex Machina, same director, though. Another real good
yeah,
movie.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, right, so
okay.
same director. But now I think you gotta if you like movies, you run out and see Vice.
Okay. But it's not I think yeah. the reason
leave your politics at home.
I think the reason it's getting that
because of the politics
is because, well, what's funny is that most critics are liberal.
I know.
With a handful of exceptions. I know.
Is there liberal fatigue?
I know. I think liberals are often very conscious of preaching to the choir and they get like, this is too heavy handed. But I think that's this point. This movie's not trying to be fair. Let's be honest about it. I think you're right in that they're not making stuff up because this shit happened.
No,
but
absolutely.
It's not trying to be fair. And balanced.
All right.
It's trying to present the case
right.
why Dick Cheney
so here's why you
was
go.
A scumbag.
Here's why
but
you go.
But it's really very cleverly done.
I'm going to give you why you go. Forget about everything we just said. Tyler Perry is Colin Powell. That's why you go to see Vice. That's why you go. That's the reason. Spend your money on that.
It's really like he's in
Black people?
There's a funny bit where in one of the Star Trek movies, Tyler Perry's he's an admiral.
He's an admiral.
And he pops up on the screen. You just can't help but go, holy shit, it's Tyler Perry.
It's Madea.
Like, no matter what he does, you can't help but just
go. But it's funny because, you know, Colin Powell is such a cook. You know what I mean? He's such a guy. They so used him for their own means. And you see that, you know, how they sent him to the UN to describe the weapons of mass destruction.
Right, right, right.
And you see that Colin Powell's kind of like rolling his eyes at this shit. And then they do it. And then they invade and there's no WMDs. And then they kick him out of, you know, and then he resigns. And it's all in there. It's great.
I can't wait to see this.
It's cool.
Great.
It's
you know,
a cool
this
movie.
And The Favorite are both about politics. One's just, you
yeah,
know,
yeah.
One's just 17th, 18th century politics.
Yeah,
and this one.
It is. I thought Vice was great. And look, right. I think if you're Dick Cheney, don't go. If you're anyone else. And you know the thing with the daughter. I mean, I'm kind of
probably
rolling.
Gone don't 10
spoil.
Times.
No, it's great. It's
don't
great.
Spoil
you
it.
He's probably gone 10 times.
Allison Pill.
Allison Pill, yes. Corey's.
Anyway.
Corey, when Allison Pill and Amy Adams are on screen, how hard is your dick?
Very,
how tell us.
In this movie, they made me not like Amy Adams.
I see what you're saying there.
Lynn Cheney is such an asshole that you're like, I don't even like Amy Adams.
Yeah.
That's how it's perverse.
It's
anyway.
Unbelievable. But
it's a really strong movie, yeah.
Yeah, go
see Vice. I got to see Vice, and what's the other one I got to see now?
Well, Ex Machina. If you didn't see Ex Machina, that you can stream or
now,
something. That's
Ex Machina, which is a Greek term, by the way.
Yeah, I know you guys didn't see this, and I saw this after I made my top. I was on.
Oh, okay.
I was on deadline for my top 10 list. Yes. I was trying at the end of the year. I was trying to see everything.
Hey, if you're playing Corey Hall Bingo, I'm on deadline. Was one of the other bingo.
That's right.
One of the other Corey Hall late bingo. Yeah.
Have you ever been on a deadline? You would know.
Oh.
Anyway,
but
no, I'm saying
I want to make this show in a deadline.
Oh. Look,
I got a deadline before my girlfriend shows up.
Anyway, yeah, exactly. Okay, now in comparison, I saw the Ruth Bader Ginsburg biopic.
Oh, okay, and on the basis of sex,
and that is a standard issue.
Yeah, it looks like it. Yeah.
Down the line, uh-huh. Biopic. You've seen the same. It's sure, structured yeah. just the way they make.
Yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah.
The music cues, the swirl. Now, Ruth Bader Ginsburg was very impressive and did mm-hmm. great things, and this is about her earlier legal career. But the movie is just very basic biopic.
Yeah, yeah.
Vice is adventurous in the way right. it tells the story.
Yeah.
The Ruth Bader Ginsburg story, mm-hmm. you might like her better if you're a liberal.
Sure.
But you're going to love her, but the movie itself is very
yeah.
down the middle, the boring way
when
they tell these all the
when
time.
When I watch a Netflix movie,
yeah.
and I'll be sitting there watching, and all of a sudden something happens that's interesting, and I'll hit pause just so I can see where we're at.
Yeah.
And it's always between 18 and 22 minutes.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
That's because that's the formula.
It's a formula.
They're following this formula
well,
the,
you
all
know,
the damn time.
When the credits roll in Vice at like the 40 minute mark, I was literally laughing out loud yeah. when the no one else in the theater was. And my girlfriend's sitting there looking at me like, what is going on here? And I'm yeah, like, yeah. I'm dying because, you know, they roll about, you know, Dick Cheney is in, you know, he was the Secretary of Defense under George Herbert
right,
Walker
right.
Bush. And, you know, he leaves office. Then they say, well, Dick Cheney and his wife moved to their ranch. And
can't help spoiling the joke.
They run
no,
all the
I'm
stuff about
it.
What
it's
great.
Wait to see it.
It's great.
Anyway, it's real good.
It's
all
great.
Right. And the other movie I did not see before the 10, I was rushing to see all these movies. Some of them were okay. Some of them weren't. And I saw Into the Spider-Verse after I'd filed my top 10 list. And I'll be goddamned if that wasn't great.
Animated Spider-Man movie. Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, it was, I know we're all sick of all the superhero stuff, yeah. but this one, it's really brilliantly done.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of form and function,
yeah.
it looks like a comic book to the point where they did a process where there's a texture on the characters
right.
that looks like comics in the 80s were printed
like
with
the,
like dots.
The printing yeah. press, yeah.
Really?
Yes.
Huh.
And it really looks like, and you know, when he shoots the web, it goes thwip, like
okay.
sound effect, you know,
yeah.
word balloons will pop up and sound effects.
Oh, shit.
And it's this really incredible, so it's like there are various multiple universes, and they all have a Spider-Man
huh.
or a Spider-Woman or mm-hmm. a spider whatever. And Nicolas Cage plays one of them, and
okay.
it's a great, funny bit.
Yeah,
the Nicolas Cage comes in and hams it
yeah,
up.
Yeah, I've heard it's real good.
John Mulaney is the cartoon
okay.
character, who was Peter Porker, who was bitten by a radioactive. He was a spider who was bitten by a radioactive
is
pig.
Pig's bitten by a spider.
No, he's a spider that's bitten by a pig.
Oh,
and turns into a
I have
spider
no.
pig.
Stop it!
I'm not kidding. Yeah, so it's. It's brilliantly
yeah,
done.
Yeah, I've heard it's real good.
It's
so,
really funny.
I'm going to have to see
now
that.
I think it
fly.
Will be nominated for Academy
animated,
Award for Animated Category.
Picture, yeah.
Tremendous cast. Everybody, it's really good.
Yeah, okay.
It's really fun. You don't even have to know shit about the Spider-Man
because
they do a really funny thing where every time they introduce a new spider character, they're like, all right, here's how it goes. I was bitten by a radioactive spider. Each one introduces themselves and they do a whole bit. It's really clever and fun. I was blown away by the art style of
okay.
it. And just the whole presentation. It's really,
I will have to,
really
you know,
well
I don't, you know, as this time of the year, I'm trying to get through what Oscar nominations aren't out.
But I think this will
weeks,
be
but,
Academy
yeah,
Award
right.
nominated for
but I,
animation.
I was telling you this on the phone. I skipped the animated category.
Well,
because I find that you got to watch these baby movies, and I know they're gonna. But since I try to see everything,
Incredibles 2
yes.
is also visually amazing.
Yes.
Both are worth seeing in the theater.
Okay,
if you just want to.
Yeah, I loved one.
If you just want to
oh,
have
yeah,
a,
the
if,
first one.
You, yeah, if you just want to have a jazz cigarette and go to the
I
movies.
Mean, it's comedy timing, this stuff, you know, where, you know, this
yeah.
happens. And
yeah,
the,
yeah, yeah.
The punchline. It's, yeah, it's
yeah,
marvelous.
I, but
it
so
was
I,
great.
And Incredibles 2 was terrific.
Yeah.
Spider-Verse kicked it in the ass.
Yeah, so,
so
I,
they're both right. worth
right.
seeing.
But I personally try to skip that category because I find that.
You
know,
know
it's,
I feel
it's,
that. Look, I feel that way too.
You don't and watch then, all the documentaries like I do. Usually, I mean, you'll see some of them, but I go out
yeah,
of my
not
way.
All, not all.
Well,
the
that's
time.
Why I went and saw Crime Plus Punishment, and you're over there.
Well,
well
a lot
commenting.
Of documentaries. A lot of documentaries that people like don't really tell me anything I don't know.
Yeah. Okay.
And so,
yeah.
And some of them have a really interesting story. You know, Three Identical Strangers.
I mean, it just Three Identical Strangers is great. Did you watch that?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was cool. Yeah, I think that was maybe my favorite this year. But
there's good, but there's so much stuff.
Yeah,
and
but
most people, by the way, when I went out my top 10 list for Metro Times, I realized I said, look, I'm narrowing this to domestic movies.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
Because if I put all the foreign movies in here, you'd be like, what the fuck is this Serbian film about, you know, deaf nuns?
Yeah, that's a category I skip to. Right. I skip foreign. And just so sometimes they're hard to find
there's
anyway.
There's a movie called Shoplifters by Hirokazu Koreeda, who's one of the great filmmakers in the world from Japan, and no one would fucking see this movie.
Yeah, yeah.
So I stuck to things I thought people had a chance to see.
I think that's good. Well,
because there's too much stuff. Well, and my job as a film critic is to parse all that stuff or sift through it. And then when people go, did you watch all 18 parts of Mrs. Maisel on Hulu?
No,
I go, kiss my grits. I'm too busy.
But that's why I suggest these documentaries on Hulu, because you might have Hulu.
But the internet, you have to know everything about everything all the time.
Well, you know.
And people are like, you got to see Bird Box right now.
Well, I did.
No,
I
haven't.
Worth it.
No, you don't.
I haven't seen Bandersnatch, which is the Black Mirror, where you have to have a smart TV to even watch the fucking thing.
Yeah, you get to choose the make decisions.
My in-laws will see that never.
Well, anyway.
Good for them.
I think we've said enough. Bill Hildebrandt.
What?
Happy 2019 to you.
Well, here we are, man.
We made it another year.
2019, here we are.
Who
would
have thought?
I've known you guys for 30 years. That is 20 years, rather. 20 years. That is
I told you it's my 20th anniversary in comedy this year.
Scarier
than
shit.
So, yeah.
And you know, I wasn't...
Here we are.
I met Bill early on, and I was not scared off from the business then. I guess you failed in your job, but... come see me at the... anyway.
Where can they see you?
I'm doing a benefit show on January 26th with Dave Landau.
Okay.
Oh, really?
And we're getting real low on tickets. We're down to a handful of...
He's working some local place. A guy of his stature is going to be in a bar.
Oh, boy.
It's not a Home Depot, is it?
Because Dave comes home.
Yeah,
And does a lot of home. We just worked and did stands together a couple weeks ago.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, but that's a club, and it paid him.
But no, Dave does all kinds of. He's always working, and he's splitting time between New York and it's.
Well, when he hears that Dave's doing a shit gig, Bill thinks he's taking money out of his pocket.
That's
right. The problem with
Dave. I can't do his marvelous gigs. He's down here taking shit away from me.
You know, when
Dave Landau, if you hear this, fuck you.
Dave's rocking the Eagles Club, and Bill can't get booked.
I haven't seen Dave in 15 damn years anyway.
Dave's great.
Dave's great.
I don't know.
You're not doing Vegas at the MGM Grand anymore.
No, but I did the Riviera for 12 years. Fuck you, both you guys.
How's the Riviera doing nowadays?
It tore it down 3 years.
I know that.
Well, you had to rub it in.
You know what I loved about...
we had a marvelous show, and now it comes down to this.
One of the many things I love about Hildy is you would wear that Riviera jacket.
And I still do.
Yeah,
fuck you.
And I was like, and I was pretty sure that was the only jacket you had. Your clothing was like almost
entirely... he has an old Comedy Castle jacket. Yeah.
At one point...
Yes, I do.
Now he's a very nice shirt. Look at this. This is a very nice shirt. Looks dressed up.
At least I took my pajama tops off. Holy shit.
I think you can see the stitching where the Ann Arbor Comedy Showcase logo was on that shirt. If you look closely.
I would say there was a point in the early 2000s where
Bill's, I got a Joey's jacket.
I bet you
do. It's a varsity jacket. Yeah. So
Bill's entire wardrobe was free comic t-shirt.
He is driving the car with the Connections bumper sticker outside. That's you, right? That's parked out there? All right.
Never worked for that asshole.
Speaking of Connections, the sad thing is that the one thing I wish I had done is go back and take the Gallagher 2 headshot when they closed that club.
Yeah, there you go.
Because they had all these headshots, you know.
Yeah.
They had 30 years of headshots up there, and the one that stood out to me was not Gallagher,
but
Gallagher 2. Ron Gallagher.
All right, let's get out of here, folks. We've done enough.
But January 26th.
That's enough damage.
At the UAW Local 228. Comedy for Cancer presents Dave Landau.
Where's that at?
Fundraiser.
What city?
In Sterling Heights.
All right.
Okay. So Dave is incredible. It's for a great cause.
Yeah.
And go find where tickets are flying out the door.
Yeah, you go get those.
We're very limited.
All right. Couple things for me. Every Tuesday night, 9:10 a.m. with Mike Bonner.
Oh, Nate Armbruster's also.
It's around midnight on 9:10 a.m. You can stream that at 9:10amsuperstation.com. We have a webcam. You can watch it. If you don't want to listen, but you can listen there.
We got to do a webcam here.
Well,
I think that'd be hilarious.
You know, you might get me drag me kicking and screaming into the 2000 teens probably not.
Right.
Also, the advanced comedy class at Mark Ridley's Comedy Castle is going to start up again next Saturday, January 12th. So sign up for that.
They don't know who's going to teach it, but they'll find
somebody. 248-542-9900. Take the advanced comedy class. If you're a comic and you want the great advice like we've given you today, You'll get that in spades every Saturday.
Much like Bill's taking lines from my act, Joel's just doing Bill's comedy class.
Oh, hey now.
He's teaching all his stuff.
Oh, shots fired.
Circle of life.
That's all right.
That's a homage.
By the way, if you're going to Corey's fundraiser, he'll be there late.
Oh,
hey, bring your bingo cards.
No, when there's money involved,
yeah,
I'll be there.
Yeah, he shows right up. All right, fuck you.
And there'll be 50-50 tickets.
Make sure to get those. I think Nate Armbruster has to announce that. Corey's moved up. Yeah, after Nate, 20 years.
No, Nate's going to have the big novelty check at the end of the show.
Good night, everybody.
Please come. It's a good show.
It's a good show. You should go. You unlike
see,
this.
You get to see Dave Landau, a touring national comedian.
Oh, yeah. Right, what am I, chopped liver?
You get to see Bill Hildebrandt, one of the great... Remember the show we did in a banquet hall where we start the show and next door there was like a high school homecoming?
Yeah, the band
and
fired
the band
up.
Fired up and you couldn't hear a goddamn word. Yeah. We were like...
didn't you play a Greek wedding where they were breaking plates on the other side
same,
of the...
Same
the
damn thing. Yeah.
We were like, oh, this is a good room. It's a nice setup. Oh, we're giving us drinks. This is great.
All right, go get the fuck
over and out, folks.
Goodbye.